and welcome to episode 462 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. My name's Vince Hunt, and joining me as always is the creator of the comic series Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who is the inspiration for classic TV shows, Magnum, Mork and Mindy, and The Littlest Hobo, it's Tony Esmond.
All at once.
All at once, yeah. They took a little bit of your personality for all three, didn't they?
What's your favourite of those three?
Magnum. Oh, yeah, Magnum.
Because yeah, me too, I think.
It's got one of the greatest credit bits of credit music ever.
I really like Magnum. I
think that bit as well, when the clip is like, wait a minute, nurses don't work on a Sunday, and the nun don't work on a Sunday.
Because the nun had like an Uzi. Or an Uzi, however you say it.
I like nuns. Do you like nuns? Do you find nuns sexual?
So this week, we're also joined by... another guest for a very special reason. We're joined by a friend of the pod and creator whose credits include such titles as No Second Chance, The Brutalist, and I hope I've got this right, Predator versus West Ham. Welcome
That's
to the
correct.
Show. Welcome to the show, Mr. Zach Cahill. And, like, I've said on this show many times, like, Predator comics upset me, or anything to do, like, a comic tie-in to Predator
That's
upsets
proper
me.
Competition, mate.
But I would read... Predator.
I mean, never mind all these fucking muscle blokes in the desert or the woods or whatever it's going to be. West Ham, I think they'd do it within about 10 minutes. You'd have trouble doing a long film about it.
Yeah. I only did 8 pages about it. So,
Wow. Well, we're going to talk about all that and more later. But Zach is here to join us for our topic. We have a topic this week, and we said it online. But in case you didn't know. There's a little sort of imprint publishing sort of movement happening right now called Ghost Machine Comics. We've talked a little bit about them on probably over the past like 3 or 4 a month or two, isn't it? Really, I think we've
I keep badgering you to talk about it, and you said no, we're going to wait.
We kind of held off.
I didn't say it like a headmistress.
That's how you sounded.
It's kind of like a thing now, isn't it? Like especially this weekend.
Yeah, and it kind of felt like this, you know. It looks special. It had all. I think I recommended the one shot. Do you remember on one of our previous episodes? When that first came out.
A lot in that.
So, yeah, there was a lot in that. But the comics themselves, do they deliver? And what is Ghost Machine? There's probably a lot of people out there thinking, what is this? Who is this? Well, we're going to get into all that and more and talk about it and have a lot of fun doing it. There's going to be an awful lot of comics talk this week.
And Jeff, if you need our PayPal account for later, leave it in the show notes.
I mean, who's Jeff? Well, that might become clear later on when we talk about it. Well, one thing that's always clear is that we absolutely love reading comics. And sometimes, well, quite a lot of the time, if you're me, we read them digitally. And do you know where I go for that, Dan?
I'm pretty sure I do know. Do we say it?
Yes, please.
It's Global Comics.
Yes, our sponsor.
Dan's like, yes, I do know. Strictly only answering the question he's been asked.
Yeah, yeah. Do you like red or blue? Yes. Yes,
that's I love very this. Polished.
Yeah. Well-oiled machine. That's what this show is, especially after all these years. And that's why Global Comics have decided to sponsor us. They are the place to go for digital comics, if you like reading them like that. There's a huge library of titles available to read on Global Comics, from thousands of indie creators to hundreds of publishers like Image Boom, Tokyo Pop, TKO Studios, Humanoid, Source Point Press, Mad Cave Comics. There's just Dynamite. That's just a few without hundreds and hundreds of like indie publishers and creators as well. And the catalogue's always growing all the time. Around this time of the show, I asked the chaps, what have you noticed on there that you want to check out or you have checked out or is worth investigating on there this week?
Oh, well, let me ask Zach, do you like skimpily dressed vampires from the planet Dranculon?
I enjoy them occasionally.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. You can find Vampirella, The Dark Powers, and Vampirella, Ash, Army of Darkness have just dropped on there last few days.
Hey, there you go.
There you go. You can read them.
Wow. You're a big Vampirella fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Vampirella, from all the way through. But Dynamite are like making a lot of the character. I think they have three ongoings at the moment.
Wow.
She's the Batman of Dynamite.
Yeah. She is. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. What about you, Dan? What are you checking out?
They're highlighting the best of Vault Comics. So we've got Barbaric, Money Shot, The Nasty, The Last Book You'll Ever Read, Godfell, Bleed and Dry, The Blue Flame, These Savage Shores, plus a whole load more. That the last book you'll ever read jumps out to me because I pointed out before, it looks very much like MI666 on the cover.
Oh, okay.
Now, it's interesting that you picked that one out, Dan, because that was one I actually started reading, the collection of that.
Any good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I haven't finished reading it because it's the whole collection is 188 pages, I think.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. I might recommend that in the future. I mean, I love the covers. The art's lovely. It's another Cullen Bunn joint.
Too busy holding up sticks.
You know that? I've been walking
again. Did you bring that stick home with you?
No. I'm very respectful to the sticks I find on my walks.
Yeah. You kind of do the old throw as fucking hard as you can when you finish.
No. I just carry it for a bit until I find another person on the walk and I hit them around the head as hard as I fucking can. And if they go down in one shot, then I know it's a good stick and they'll keep it. Anyway.
Until one day the paparazzi find him in a bush and they say, what are you doing in this bush, Vince? Off the famous ACP podcast. And he says, I'm just looking for sticks.
Yeah.
Well, not exposing myself. And he goes, here's the evidence of me collecting sticks.
This podcast episode, wherever it is, I'll talk about extensively.
Yeah, proof, if it was ever needed, that I'm not, in fact, flashing at old ladies out of this bush.
What the actual fuck is happening?
We're in the middle of an advert.
We're in the middle of a fucking sponsorship, and you just fucking nuked me. I've been purged.
No, evidently, I proved that you weren't a flasher.
Oh no! All you did was say that I'm building up an alibi over a long period of time.
It's a long game, Vince.
Oh, that's why you shouldn't go on social media.
I'm going to show you wiener to old ladies. You need to prepare.
But you should check out Global Comics because they are awesome. And with the app, you can not only read all of those great comics, you can follow creators, set reading status filters, release notifications for books you're looking forward to checking out in the future. Or if there's a title you're reading and you're all caught up on it, it will notify you when the new books, all the tie-ins and spin-offs are there as well. As well as, you know, if it does seem, you go on there is so many comics on there. Don't panic because you can add your own to read later.
Yeah.
Sort of, there's loads of different lists and that's a godsend for me.
I can just try and read it straight away.
Yeah.
There was an update during the week and I'm sure you can now look at a title and then go to the issue in that title. I didn't think you could do that before. It just laid them out all after the other because I looked in Transformers today and you can just jump straight to issue 4. I'm sure it used to be you looked at one and if you do
the information tab, on the iPad, that's where it brings up the synopsis, doesn't it?
Depends how the collection or issues are formatted, I think, doesn't it, sometimes? Yeah.
If you go to a publisher and do that, you can see an awful lot of different titles.
I didn't notice that. Avery Hill, they've got so much stuff in there.
Yeah,
got
loads. You forget how much they've done, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what's that book we've done recently? The Centre Point guy.
The space one. That's quite new. That's only just come out.
That's really new. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're very grateful for them sponsoring us, but we actually use this service quite a lot. In fact, it was really handy for this week's particular episode. And there's so much value for money on this that if you're a comics reader, especially if you're someone who travels a lot and, like, you know, you can read it on your phone or on your iPad and stuff, it really is worth checking out. So, and if you're a creator, you can publish your digital comics for free. There's loads of tools for you to help with publishing, marketing, and more. Or maybe you just want to read some comics, or you know someone new to the hobby that just wants to jump in, then Global Comics is the place for them and you. So go to Global Comics, that's comicswithanx.com. Download the app, which is available now on Apple App Store or Google Play, and immediately you can just start reading and publishing digital comics like never before. And also, if you just want to try it, there's loads of free comics on there as well.
More and more free ones.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think they're offering a free sub service at the moment for like a couple of days. They've extended it.
Yeah, try before you buy kind of thing, is it? But seriously, you jump in now, especially what we said about the Vault catalogue, a lot of, they've just been a big partnership, but, you know, Vault have jumped in.
It's the unlocked vault now on Global Comics. To celebrate, we're offering 50% on your first year subscription. Get the full access to the vault's vast catalogue, plus exclusive veteran editions and so much more. So, yeah, go check that out now if you're thinking about, if you're on the fence.
Yeah,
we've 50%
about,
off.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of Vault comics.
I don't like it when we're being this professional. Sorry.
I know, well, you say that, Tony, but you did fucking insinuate that I hide in bushes with my trousers around my fucking ankles. So it only goes so far in terms of professionalism.
No, I said I don't like it when we're professional.
Is that why you threw that hand grenade in the middle, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, it. Okay.
Okay. I wasn't sure there's so much an insinuation there as just a...
just bloody claim.
Yeah,
outright claim.
Pretty bad.
Nobody draw a picture of Vincent Bush. Nobody draw it.
Do you know what? This is a fucking really... This is really interesting from two guys who don't realise all the outtakes I've got and all the shit that you say off air.
Fucking hell. Never mind cancelled.
You want to burn me? I'll fucking burn you. I'll burn you out of existence.
Come and visit us in Belmarsh.
Yeah.
You can contact us through the email to get the visiting order.
As you can see, we quite clearly hate each other, but it is the road for 500, and all is well. So we're looking forward to that. Yeah. In fact, we're talking a little bit about prep for 500 and other
things.
Talking
about it. Yeah.
We'll get into the shout-outs in just a bit, but of course. This week, we're going to be talking about Ghost Machine. I don't think they've ever said it like that. I don't know. No, I mean,
I wish you hadn't.
It's such a... I mean, we're going to talk about... we're going to talk about who they are. I mean, one of their statements is, creators you know and characters you'll love. That's the sort of Ghost Machine sort of...
One of the other things, Vince, I heard as well was they want to create beyond superheroes. That's an interesting statement as well.
Yeah.
Beyond superheroes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to start off with who is Ghost Machine? Who and what is a Ghost Machine? Now, obviously, there was the one shot with a bit of a sort of mission statement in there, wasn't there? Have you got that? Has anyone got that handy?
I haven't.
Mine's, I can just see my spinning wheel as I went to scroll to the page.
Perhaps we should start and saying we've asked Zach on. So Zach's here. And you've read it this week as well. So you've read the first three titles, have you, dude?
Yeah, I read the first three. I read the first three issues of Geiger and issue one of Rook and Redcoat. Tore through them this afternoon. I was really tight for time. And I was kind of going, oh my God, I'm going to retain any of this, or is it a bit like homework?
That's right.
And then I just sat down and I tore through them, and I just found them very engaging. And you get sucked into that world pretty quick.
The
art is so gorgeous as well, obviously, which is a huge, huge factor. But I was really impressed.
I think the thing is, we are quite cynical about new comics ventures. I don't know why. We shouldn't be. We love the media.
Burned so many times, T.
I think maybe that's it, mate. You know, and this was not the case. I mean, today I was in the shop getting my pull list today, and I've asked them to put every Ghost Machine title on my pull list.
Good shout.
Because they're just quality books.
Yeah. Which we'll get into in just a
Yeah, we're going
second.
To talk about it. How's your spinning wheel going, V?
I've got it now.
If you need it.
I've got it now. In the first one-shot, they did a preview, which I...
We talked about that preview, didn't we?
Yeah. In terms of preview, sometimes it can be a real Russian roulette kind of sort of mixed bag of like, what is this? Yeah. Sometimes we've had them from smaller publishers and like, what is this mess? This immediately was very well thought out. And if you want a taste of it, I'd go back and check it out because it's got like character profile, you know, sort of nice stat sort of file cards, isn't it, for characters and things like that. But to begin with,
it's also got the three comics that haven't come out as single issues yet as well.
Yeah, which we'll talk a little bit towards the end, what's coming next. But they have like almost a mission statement at the beginning. And this is what it is. I'm just going to read it straight off. We believe in two vital principles. First, great comics come from great characters. And second, equity comes from true artist ownership. Committed to these ideals and inspired by so many who came before us, Ghost Machine is introducing new characters from all genres with the Unnamed, featuring the action-packed Geiger, Junkyard Joe, and Redcoat. The sprawling sci-fi saga of Rook, the family odysseys of the Rocketfellers and their friends, and the horror universe on Hyde Street. Our hero stories are painted across the epic tapestries of American history, the deepest reaches of space, the neighborhood one street over, and the dark secrets that people hide from the rest of the world. Building on the groundbreaking foundation of Image Comics, we prioritize the artist and understand the power that comes from uniting with others. To that end, we completely co-own our company, characters, and universe together, sharing in publishing, but also in media, merchandise, and beyond. Best of all, we're only the first wave of writers and artists who will form Ghost Machine. However, Ghost Machine isn't only for creators of today, but for the creators of tomorrow. We all dreamed of working for Marvel and DC when we first started out, but we don't want the next generation of artists and writers to simply work for Ghost Machine. As our company grows, we will invite tomorrow's superstars to join our Ghost Machine family and co-own the universes of characters we're all building together. Creators you know, characters you'll love, welcome to Ghost Machine. I mean, that's quite a...
That's a great ethos.
It's it's great. I really like it. Is it a little bit corporate?
I think it has to be. You have to be professional as well as... It's finding that balance of message and professionalism, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, maybe 20 years ago, I'd have gone, here we go, another fucking business venture, you know, very slick business venture.
Yeah.
But now I'm so fed up with the fucking buffoons in the comic industry. I'm quite pleased that these guys have got their act together. You know what I mean? And I think it's, I'm actually doubled up on how much I do enjoy that they've got this very sensible and well put together package, on the grounds that if you guys go to the Ghost Machine YouTube channel, they are having a fucking ball, those dudes.
Yeah.
They're fucking loving it. They're taking the piss out of each other. They're enjoying each other's company. They're talking about comics creation nonstop. I'm massively warm to them when I watch that.
And alongside that sort of mission statement was the like some small thumbnails of this first wave of creators.
Yeah.
Brad Anderson, Jason Fabok, Gary Frank, Brian Hitch, Jeff Johns, Rob Lee, Lamont McGee, Francis Manipal, Brad Meltzer, Ivan Reis, Peter Schneeberg.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Peter J. Tomasi and Maytal Shutt. I think I probably murdered several names there, and I apologise to every creator involved. But that's a murder as well, isn't it?
There's some names there, man. Yeah.
Well, I kind of feel like we're at a point where kind of people realise that maybe Marvel DC isn't the way to go if they kind of want to make a long-term career out of this. Maybe make a name at the big guys, but then you want to have your own company. And there's kind of different people trying different things. And this potentially might be the one to kind of like get that breakthrough and go on. I mean,
we're not. Go on. I mean, from what you say there, Dan, I actually see that. Well, Jeff Johns is kind of the showrunner of this, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's the big cheese. Did you think that?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, like, there's so many great creators and individuals in this, but like, he's gonna. I would like think like a guiding light for the group.
Yeah. If you watch the YouTube videos and stuff, or listen to him on podcasts or anything, that's very much his baby.
Right. Okay. That's great.
And he's brought all these people together, and I'm a fan. I like him. I'm not like a super fan of his, but I don't think I've read a badly written comic by him. He's got
he's great at managing like lots of characters, right? I mean, anything I've read of his, he's good at sort of stepping back and having this like cast of thousands, and it feeling like it all clicks together, you know. So he seems like a capable set of hands, you know.
Yeah,
it's basically like a set of editorial. And working as kind of a bit of an editor in that way, making sure they're all kind of going in the right direction. I feel like certain titles and companies don't have that input anymore, or a lack of it.
And a couple of names you mentioned there, Vince, add to what I would refer to as consistency of the books and the product, in that Brad Anderson colours nearly everything very well. And Rob Lee, who I don't know, it's hard to tell, but from his presence in the videos, I kind of think he's... a bit more of a sort of part of it than just a letterer. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
And he's a fucking laugh and a half, isn't he, mate? If you look at it on Instagram, it's him doing like a gorilla impression, wandering up and down the fucking restaurant there. You know, doing that wavy arm thing, you know, like fucking he's a geezer. He is. Yeah.
So it's certainly, it's making a sort of splash. They clearly, and a lot of these people like Jeff Johns and stuff, they've worked on higher tiers of comics, not just comics, but obviously the other mode of production and media and stuff like this. One thing I like about it, even though they talk about media and merchandise and stuff like that, there's always the view. It felt to me that this, they were trying to say comics. This is comics. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't any, oh, we're making comics. Later on down the road, you're going to see movies and you're going to games.
Yeah. As soon as people say that, it turns me off.
Yeah, totally. And certainly, they've got a merch shop and everything. So immediately they've got like the branded stuff. What do you think of the name Ghost Machine itself?
I was a bit dubious of it at the start, to be fair. I thought, what is this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it remains to be seen what that is actually in reference to. I suppose it's memorable, but I'm not sure exactly what it means.
Yeah, there's a comic that hasn't come out yet, which I think is... I'm not sure. Is it written by Brad Meltzer called First Ghost, which we haven't seen yet?
Okay.
So I'm wondering if that is some kind of indicator of what's going on.
Mm. Yeah, they're seeding a lot of things, aren't they? Like, I think quite successfully. So you do get the sense that this is all heading somewhere. This is all going to kind of converge in an interesting way, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It can't be an afterthought, just the fact that I would still call it Ghost Machine. There's got to be a reason.
I mean, this whole thing feels like it's been planned. You would think would be, of course it's been planned, everything's been planned, but we read comics, we know about the publishing of comics. Some things clearly haven't been fucking planned or thought about. They don't think years down the line.
Star Wars was a $1 billion franchise and they made 3 films with no fucking plan.
Don't fucking start me on that. That really bothers me. So much work has probably gone into this even before it started. Although some of these comics and series have been seen before. Tony's even mentioned them on the show before. Mm. So we'll probably get into that a little bit more shortly afterwards. But I think first, in terms of Ghost Machine, I think, as you say, Zach, it's memorable. You sort of think, I mean, because I can't get my head around it. It feels like, oh, this doesn't feel like a publishing house. It feels like an imprint, even though it's calling itself Ghost Comics. I think I mentioned on the show previously, it's published through Image. They're running them through Image currently. I'm getting Top Cow vibes in a way of like they're currently with one place. If they do well enough, they'll maybe break off and become their own thing. Mm. But the little Ghost Machine logo underneath the Image logo doesn't really work for me in its own way. But I think there's a certain, perhaps a safety net of the Image for now, for starting this, having the Image publishing, you know, rather than starting off, if Ghost Machine were immediately the publisher straight off. Sometimes.
Yeah, if it was his own company, it's difficult penetrating previews, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would turn it almost, I see what you're saying, Evie, is that they're also using them as a parent company. You know, naturally, they're a publishing platform.
It's an umbrella to which to start off, isn't it?
Yeah. But I wonder whether, and over the years, you know, in 3 or 4 ways, we've seen Image change over the years, haven't we?
It's
sort of been a rolling change of how, you know, we've had the early days, we've had the saga days, we've had the current day, you know. But I wonder whether this is where Image go. Rather than Image being books coming out from Image, they pull back on that and they have Image presents Ghost Machine, Image presents blah, blah, blah.
Well, I mean,
I wonder whether that's a possible direction.
You're not wrong, because I think I think you mentioned one there, Tony, it just slipped my mind. But for instance, Skybound is basically Ghost Machine is almost like that, isn't it? It's very much so. Skybound is very much its own thing. But we all always see that the eye in the top corner, don't
the image.
We?
Like the Millsverse stuff, the Millerverse stuff as well.
I was just going to say, it seems the philosophy of it is, because Miller talks about this kind of thing a lot, where, you know, he's like, look, we all know who the best artists are, and people just want to put good writers and the best artists on books. You know, there's not an infinite pool of people who can do this to the top level, and we know who those guys are. And if you want to track them, you have to give them a set. Nowadays, you kind of have to give them a piece of the pie, you know, which is obviously what he's doing. That seems to be the same sort of idea, you know.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's comparable. It's the biggest thing it's comparable to is the Mark Miller stuff.
Yeah.
You know, high quality, good art.
Yeah.
Fun, fast paced action writing. Yeah. You know, good comics. That's what Miller did. That's what they're doing here. That's what Kirkman has done to a less of a splashier reason. But yeah, I think very comparable to Miller's stuff. I wonder whether Jeff has seen that happening and thought, yeah, I could do this. I can have this.
As well as having a lot of other like top of the line creators going, I want to create something for myself, but if I publish it on my own, is there safety in that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How long will it last? Yeah. Whereas I think unifying it into this,
and the way that Miller talks a lot about that, you know, separation of, you know, Miller's artists have had big pay packets. You know, he talks about that time they all turned up at his house and there was £1 million under each chair. You know, so I wonder, you know, that people have seen that. The top tier of artists who Marvel are now losing to these companies, we see it time and time again. I mean, Miller talks about, who am I going to nick next off Marvel and DC? You know, we see it, and this is where they're going. They're going to Miller, they're going to Kirkman, they're going to now Geoff Johns. Who's next? You know, Hickman. Mm. You know, who's Bendis? You know, who's going to do it next?
The thing is, I know the cynical sort of the people from the bigger companies, the suits will probably have in their mind, well, they'll go off, they'll do this thing, it won't do very well, and then they'll come back to us.
Yeah, they'll be back eventually.
But
I think there's resentment there, isn't there, among this generation of artists who have seen Marvel become this, obviously, this gigantic multimedia empire, while they themselves have not seen the rewards. I mean, Brian Hitch talking about himself, but like, he's, you know, he was essentially one of the sort of architects of the MCU in terms of, like, they took their cues from the Ultimates. And I don't think he saw much.
I think he got Samuel L. Jackson to buy his original art. You know,
I mean, like, that kind of the corporateness of it. What was that guy that passed recently? And basically, they tried to scrub his name off the credits for writing the character. What was the character? It was disgusting.
It was Wolverine, wasn't it?
With, what's the name? They went in and kind of like tried to retroactively. Retroactively remove the fact that he had something to do with it. And it's like, why are you doing this? Like, this is awful.
So, like, lots of big, like, sort of bigger name creators getting together is, I mean, it's definitely, I feel excited about this. Which I want to say surprises me, but as soon as I saw the books, I was like, oh, what's this? Which we'll start off with.
Zach said, as soon as I started reading them, it was like,
Where do we hear about this? Because obviously this has been bubbling along. I mean, I don't really pay attention to comic news sites. I just said that with very sarcastically when I said the word news. you know, there wasn't. So, I mean, it's not like we got a press release or things like that. But eventually it sort of came on my radar. I think it kind of came onto my radar with the one shot. But, of course, Tony, you... When you were reading the series before, was there any hint of what was to come?
You realised as you got into it that Geiger the first thing I read? I mean, this is lockdown time I was reading these, if not maybe just before. So it goes back a while. I think I was reading Geiger, and then I thought, you just read Geiger. Geiger was a good story, you know, post-apocalyptic story. And I'm reading that and thinking, and Gary Frank's on the art, so it's a must-buy for me. I saw it in previews, ordered it. And then Junkyard Joe came along, which I fucking loved. But with Junkyard Joe, you began to get the sense that there's this timeline going on, which you talked about in The Unnamed series. And Junkyard Joe's it's different, man, from these. It's drawn by Frank, so it's got the quality of Geiger. You know, it's got that quality that, you know, a bit like Jason Fabok or something like that, Rook. But it's a very touching story.
Mm.
You know, it could easily be drawn by someone more cartoony. Yeah. In fact, there's little excerpts, the little bits that are drawn in there. I won't ruin it, but it's about a robot from Vietnam, and there's actually a cartoon about him, but he's real.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. You know,
cool idea. Such a cool idea.
I think
that alternate history stuff. That retro and they clearly stuff. Yeah.
There's a lot of history stuff within these books, but I think one thing that you brought up, Tony, which is we'll just reiterate as we're talking about this, when we say there's all these new characters, and I know they said it in what I just read out, but this isn't here's one universe. It's all going to mix together at some point. They have separate.
There's like sections. Four universes, aren't
there's
there?
Yeah. Four universes, and the Unnamed seems to be the biggest one, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah, I think it's because it started earliest. Yeah, you know, So the unnamed, like you said there, but the you've got other stuff that is in universes that we haven't seen yet that hasn't come out of certain comics.
Yeah. Yeah, the horror, the horror stuff hasn't really hit yet, has it?
No, Hyde Street had that little, was it 8 pages in the preview?
Yeah.
Which sort of set you up. That was quite good. As did Rockefellers and Hornsby and Halo as well.
Yeah.
Which are in there. And we're still waiting for them, and along with First Ghost, which we haven't seen at all yet.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there's a hint. I know I said this to you on the WhatsApp, didn't I? Jeff Johns hints at there being a big signing that they haven't revealed yet in one of the YouTube videos. And I was saying to you guys, I think it's Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
Because I know they're good friends, and they became very friendly on the 52 minis, the 52 weekly series.
Hmm.
And I think he would fit.
Yeah.
But I don't know for sure. I don't know whether.
No. I think that's a good bit of speculation. I think there's grounds for that.
But if it's not a writer, I mean, what kind of artist do you think would join them? Do you know what I mean? Like a big name. I mean, who you know?
Yeah, I mean, you've only got to look at the Milliverse people, haven't you? Yeah. You know who's
those
from
guys?
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but if it's not those people, maybe like Stuart Immonen,
yeah,
or someone like that. But I don't know whether it's fascinating.
Well, Immonen's the artist, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There could be so much, and that's the exciting thing about this, isn't it?
Immonen would fit, actually, thinking about it, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Be really good, really good. And it's all going to be very good. What about Dan and Zach? Where did you first sort of hear of what Ghost Machine was?
I think I just would have seen it on Gary Frank. Because I kind of just follow creators, really. I'm not like loyal to a character or to Marvel, DC, whatever. I kind of follow the creators. So I just saw Gary Frank posting about it, I think. So it would have been fairly recently. And actually, I didn't realize Tony was just saying this has been, you were reading some of these years ago. I thought this was a relatively new thing.
Okay. Yeah, because I know you were saying you've read the first three issues of Geiger. I think you've read the first three issues of the original Geiger.
Right, which is fine.
It's fine. It's the same story and everything. You know. I think that's slightly confusing, I guess, for newcomers.
Yeah.
I did find it a bit confusing, I think, because there's also Geiger Ground Zero. I read two issues of that, which is more of an origin story.
Yep.
And I was also under the impression that all of these universes were linked in some way, and I was kind of really impressed by that. I was like, oh my god, so you got this red coat guy, you got a timeline that's going to end up with this Rook thing. So that's not the case.
I think Rook
wasn't super clear.
Rook's outside it, is that right?
But the unnamed has a historical timeline. I mean, Redcoat very specifically has a historical timeline.
Rook, could be in it because he's set on another world.
Is it in one of the latest?
Well, Redcoat's mentioned in the first issue of Geiger, isn't he?
Okay.
Yeah.
The first new issue of Geiger.
Yeah, because they mention it. Dan, where did you hear about
it? Oh, for you guys. You guys talking about it. And I was like, okay. And then I read that first teaser intro where it's got a bit of everything. Mm-hmm. That was great. And then straight onto these ones, which are fucking,
it's interesting, because obviously we're a UK-based podcast, and like sometimes we just get the ripples of what happens in the States, don't we, in terms of like news.
Didn't really come across this at all until you guys are going to mention it, and then you start seeing it everywhere.
I mean, and we're about to get into the meat of it and start talking about the actual titles themselves, but before we do, I think if you're UK-based, there's a real feeling of the sort of stories and flavour of Tales going on here that fits in well if you like reading 2000 AD. There's a certain sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's very much.
That's weird because I just literally written down there heavy metal.
Yeah.
I literally just wrote down BD heavy metal style. And of course, that's what 2000 AD was based on.
Yeah.
It wouldn't go amiss if you picked up a copy of Heavy Metal and found one of these in it. It would slot in perfectly.
Yeah.
Especially, I think Rook, most of all.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
There's also the feeling that, like, I think Heavy Metal was like this in the sense that the story was very much driven by what the artist fancied drawing. You just get the sense that I kind of want to draw a guy flying on this, or, you know, or like Gary Frank wanted to draw a two-headed wolf and a skull guy, you know. And then the story almost comes second. It's like, all right, well, how the fuck do we make sense of this? Let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But then when you do read the story, there's actual meat to the bone, isn't there? You know,
there is.
Because I mean, a lot of the image boom was the art was there, The story didn't always back it up.
The story was irrelevant, but the story here is almost a pleasant surprise. You're like, oh, this is a beautiful book. Yeah.
Lovely.
But then actually, it does hang together, and you know, it is an interesting read.
A lot of poetical writing as well. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the first, I absolutely love the first line of Rook. That, to me, that's how you open a comic, where it says, no one knows why the world engine failed, but it did. I'm like, fucking hell, that's the best first line.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, you got me with that. It's like the opening scroll on a movie. You're like, I'm in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which brings us to the first book that we're going to talk about, which is Rook Exodus, issue one. This is by Jeff Johns and Jason, is it Fabok or Fabok?
I'm not sure.
I'm going to say Fabok. Apologies.
Okay,
Or is it Fabok? I don't know. They're the creators. Brad Anderson is the colorist. Rob Lee is the letters. There is a murderer's row of cover artists for the first one. Steve Blackwell is the designer. I think that's quite important. The design of these books is very important, I think, as well.
Yeah, oh, good. They're so slick.
So very, very slick. And Brian Cunningham is the editor-in-chief of this book. Now, Rook Exodus. A struggling farmer from Earth was given a second chance on the planet Exodus, a terraformed world where every aspect of nature is controlled by humanity, including the winged scavengers who plagued his crops. Now called Rook, the farmer became one of the wardens, those who wear helmets capable of commanding an animal species. But when the world's engine failed, the power of the wardens fell into the wrong hands. Those who could afford to fled.
Right.
Forcing that is because it was split onto another line. That really confused me. That did. Forcing those left behind to choose between trying to escape this war-torn world before its destruction, or fighting to save it. All of that is on the very nicely on the inside cover of issue one. So the classic Marvel. Here's your setup. Let's get on with the book.
In you go.
For me, my favourite.
Yeah, I really liked Rook.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah, beautiful. Look, I'd never heard of him before, but he is definitely, of equal standard to the two other fellas.
Like talking about BD again, he could be in an album on the French.
Oh, yeah.
Shelf,
those big like vistas with all the multiple spaceships going across the sky, looking up from the field and everything. It's just amazing stuff. Yeah.
So I feel like all these guys are in competition. I feel like
competition breeds.
They're like, you can imagine they're like all in the same sort of online studio. And like in the old days when Gibbons used to share a studio with McMahon, and he'd be looking over his shoulder to see what he's doing. Yeah. You can see I kind of feel these boys are doing that.
Yeah.
The only thing I've mentioned about Rook, which confused me when I opened it, is the teaser book. Rook, the character that represents the Rook universe is a female.
Yeah,
cover.
Clocked that. I didn't know what was going on with that.
And I think maybe she's much a background character in the issue, isn't she?
Yeah. I think there's, I mean, this first issue, obviously setting up for the world, lots of just the design of the costumes. And when I read some of that setup, it's like they're wearing masks that can control animals. Where's my Saturday morning kids cartoon? Do you know what I mean? It's tailor made.
Dan was going on about masks the other day.
Yeah.
But there's also a little bit of like Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials kind of idea. Have you guys read those books? You know, the idea of you got your demon, which is the particular animal, and then, you know, these guys kind of take on some of the properties of the animal and all that. You know, there's a little bit of that to it as well. It's its own thing. It's a unique idea.
And the animals are huge as well. You've got that. It's got that wonderful sci-fi tinge.
Fucking bear, man. That bear.
Gigantic bear.
You got bears, you got boars, you got birds.
It's vet because they're before they become wardens, their psychological kind of profile like marks out what they're going to be. And with Rook's background, he was a farmer, wasn't he? And like he's got some kind of psychological thing with the birds attacking his father's crops. There's a bit of a mysterious backstory of like what's happened there and
something else. Yeah,
that's going to be kind of divulged in
because Dan's got a helmet that controls blondes.
Oh, watch out, Dan. It looks like he's burning everyone.
what animal would you be controlling over if you were...
Badgers.
Chimps.
Badgers, okay. Chimps. Do you come across?
Which means you two have been in trouble. Can get in. Anyway.
Oh my god! I've just realised this is a furry book by Backdoor Furry Book.
Backdoor Furry Book is completely different fucking thing.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I mentioned my one kind of complaint I had about this book, and it's literally only because of the guided view on Comixology. The way they do it, there's one scene where a character jumps out, and they've done the guided view that goes around the character, and he's like blacked out from the background. I was like, didn't like that. That's kind of
Don't do that.
I like the panel-to-panel stuff. That's absolutely fine. But when it just, like, isolated a character, it's like, I don't need that. Don't need it.
Yeah. For me, when I read this, and this is also my pick of the three. It's the one that's most in my wheelhouse. I mean, forget about it. We could talk about that for days. There's a double-page splash of a ruined city, which is fucking unbelievable. And that's not getting into the fact that he's got to draw vehicles and animals and everything else going on, and it's all pretty much just fucking perfect. The writing of it, it's got that great first line, but the book takes it took me a couple of pages to get into the rhythm of it.
Okay.
The art caught me, first of all, and I was following the story through that. After that first line, it feels like the writing... It sounds horrible to say this. I don't mean this. It's a bit more basic, and then it gains in confidence as it goes on. It sort of picks up.
Okay. Yeah.
And before I knew it, I was in. Do you know what I mean? It was just one of those. Just when it started, I was like, okay.
From a writing point of view, written word on the page point of view, there's a lot of pages with writing, and then there's a lot of pages with virtually none.
Yeah.
Mm. So what like Johns that, does, he gives you like story. Writing, and then you get some pages where barely anything is written, but the story is communicated, and which I think is an expert way in giving a reader an enjoying ride through a book.
Yeah.
If it's like full on text, it's like too much. If it's just no text, it's almost too little. But what he does is he gives the reader that little reading break.
Yeah.
It was really well paced. You know, you had those pages where it was just the guy going and finding bottles of booze. You know, to kind of himself into a stupor, and he puts an X on the door. Like, that was just really well paced. Yeah.
Proper Amiga Man stuff.
Because he's a scavenger, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, it's made of a lot of bits of other sci-fi stuff. Like, there's a bit of, like, I Am Legend. Like, there's a bit of Interstellar. There's, you know, like, you've seen, in some ways, you've kind of seen a lot of the stuff before. There's the corporations that are exploiting everyone, or, you know. So, like, but it cobbles together into something that does feel like its own thing. You know?
And there's a pervading hopelessness about it.
Which
is old school sci-fi chilling.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching, a lot of us watched Rollerball a couple of weeks ago because Johnny Cannon was talking about it. And there's that hopelessness amongst everyone then.
Yeah.
You know, we're so far in the future, just nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to survive. Yeah. And you know this dude's going to die in a matter of weeks. But you know he's trying, and he's almost getting pissed sometimes. And then he's just like trying to build stuff and...
Yeah, trying to build a rocket, aren't they? That's fucking really, really.
Who can build a rocket? Yeah. The one of the things I noticed as well reading it is I hate flashbacks. I fucking hate them. They bore me. You know, they're like origin stories. They bore me. You know, every time fucking Spider-Man gets bitten again, I just want to move through the comic. You know,
is that how he got his powers?
Yeah. But I didn't mind it in this one. Didn't mind the flashback in this. It's all right.
Yeah, because it was well done. There's flashbacks in all three of the books, I think, and I think it's handled well in all of them.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Because
it's
used as storytelling devices to give you a bit more information.
Yeah, not just
rather than preach to you. Right, this is how it came to be.
Yeah.
You see a little moment in time, and then we're back. You know, it's letting the reader. I think that's the best way to use flashbacks, isn't it? Sometimes is just give them just enough to keep them interested. So they want to know, well, how this person's so different from that now. How did we get here? You know, that kind of thing.
I've sometimes got Spawn vibes to it. You know, like sometimes you get a close-up of their hand and it's like red sort of leather with spikes on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah,
there's another Spawn.
It's got, you know, that classic sort of Mad Max-ish. Kind of.
There's a lot of Mad Max, Fist of the North Star. I thought. Maybe with Geiger as well. I thought that a little bit as well. Actually, there's a little bit of that in there.
His vehicle is very much like Batmobile from the Christopher Nolan films.
Yeah.
With Road Warrior. Yeah. The big elephant in the room for this is, for me, this is what Valiant was 10 years ago when it was good.
I was gonna talk about, is it the new Valiant? Do you know what I mean?
And I feel it is. Yeah, I know we mentioned that months ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
We said, look, we feel like it's like the new Valiant. Fucking please, let there be a new Valiant. But we feel like this is kind of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's early days to be talking about this, but if the Valiant characters don't recover for the next 10 years,
back.
But fingers crossed, but, you know, who knows how long this will last. But if this, you know, if this is all we get, do you know what I mean? It's a happy substitute.
We
get both. It'd be nice.
Yeah, the pacing, the narrative for this is a lot of what do they call it? The self narrative, you know, that we get.
The inner monologue.
Inner monologue.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of thing, which it's painting a picture of the world as this guy's sort of driving through it. Like one of the most striking moments to me is when he's driving into this city and he just says, New Mason was one of the city's better world built as advertised, complete with every amenity a family could ever want, as the doors of this place are opening. The wonderful pacing of, like, breaking up the words. He said, 2 years ago, it had a population of almost 800,000. Today, it's one.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
in less than a month, it will be zero. And while you're seeing this guy drive through this place, that you can see wonderful architecture and structures and industrial-like equipment, it's something that used to be epically futuristic and hopeful, is now just barren.
And he throws that time thing in because that's important as a reader, you know, to know that it's not years, it's not months, it's literally weeks they've got left. He throws it in there as an inner monologue narration thing, but he also, doesn't his mate, the boar guy, he says it to him later as well.
Yeah.
He said, we ain't got long, we've only got weeks.
Mm. And you get a countdown of days when every time he uses a hotel room, doesn't he, spray cans an X to say, I've used that room. And you get a couple of panels of where he's doing that. So there's a kind of marking time passing, which is a great,
great device.
Great device. I mean,
so how long can it run? Is this a 12-issue series? You know, it's hard to tell, isn't it?
Yeah, because it certainly feels like a story that has an end game, because you have this, and also, do they escape the world? And it talks in the synopsis of, like, do they leave the world or do they fight to help it survive? So it's like... Mm. What's going on? You know, how can you say, it feels like, how
what's going on Earth as well, I think, is a big one. You know, like, I think that clearly these companies are not telling the truth. You know, why are they so keen to give him the money, the family the money, to get off the land if Earth is this place that everyone is so desperate to leave? You know, what's going on? There's something more to it, I think.
Aliens.
Probably aliens.
And sex robots. That's coming.
So
we're kind of, Zach, you're not sure if this is your number one out of the three.
I think Geiger might be, just because I read much. That's hard. I'm kind of moving around a little bit. Maybe Geiger, because I read more of it. But I did think it was fantastic. And I
think naming a favorite is almost too harsh for these books, because they're all really,
no, they're all really
good. Oh, totally. Yeah,
spoilers, we like them all. But it's an interesting choice of the first three to reveal as well, isn't it? A different sort of, you know, how different are the flavors of stories? Because two of them are post-apocalyptic, and then one is very historical. It's interesting.
It's weird because there's more civilization in Rook, but it's more isolated because it's still there. Like, he's more lonely because there's the trappings of lots of people around him that are no longer there. Whereas in Geiger, we're more into the classic kind of Mad Max wasteland kind of thing, where there's very little structures and it's all kind of burnt down. Speaking of Geiger, should we transition on to that?
To Geiger?
Yes. Without any spoilers for the end of Rook as well, we recommend it. All of the first issues, by the way, of these books, if you can read them on Global Comics now, but certainly if you want to buy them digitally on Comixology, they've just dropped in price. So they're only like £1.59. Pounds.
I think that's because we're about to get the cycle of second issues, mate, I think. Because Geiger is out, if you listen to this on the day of release, in a couple of days.
Yeah. Geiger 2. And the second Rook is out 22nd of May.
Right, guys. Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, Rook is also, the first issue, with all the back matter and everything else, is 56 pages.
So, and also it's just £3.99. $3.99 as a comic, which is cheaper than a regular
you got the print copies, and you were telling us just before we recorded that very well put together, aren't they, books?
Oh, mate, lovely cardstock covers. You know, I mean, I pay $4.99 for a DC comic and $3.99 for the most Marvel comics, and this is twice the size, double the quality, you know.
Yeah, and the last moment of Rook is a little bit jaw-dropping, and I'm a bit scared of what's coming next. I immediately thought, wow, that almost looks like a page from a Predator book I want to read.
So
Rook, double thumbs up. That's four thumbs up from all of us. Next is Geiger, which of course has been mentioned a few times. This is Geiger number one that was that has appeared before, but the synopsis reads, "It all starts here, series premiere. The critically acclaimed team of storytellers Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, Geiger, Ground Zero, and Doomsday Clock return to the nuclear wasteland of their best-selling Geiger for an all-new ongoing series starring the violent and unpredictable Glowing Man. Leaving his home behind, Tarek Geiger now walks the radioactive roads of the former United States with his two-headed wolf Barney. But as I love the fact that it's called Barney. But as his enemies doggedly pursue him, Geiger discovers salvation from the unlikeliest of foes. But what secrets does this potential ally hold that could help Geiger? And exactly how many people are after the Glowing Man, and why?" So, obviously,
worth mentioning here is I think the OG Geiger 2 series are out in hardback next week as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really. Okay. Creators for this one. Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, creators. Brad Anderson, colorist. Rob Lay, letterers. There was a couple of different covers. Brian Cunningham, editor-in-chief. Steve Blackwell, designer. So there you go. There's something about me that just quite likes the fact that Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, they just call them creators. They don't say writer, artist.
Yeah, that is cool. I like that.
Nice. It's like, this is theirs kind of thing, which is really cool. So, Tony, as you've got a bit of history, do you want to kick us off with this one?
Yeah, I'm going to say this is the least complicated. It's much more of a straight action, man on a mission, picks up a wolf, picks up a sidekick, on a mission across it.
It's got a Western vibe to it.
Very much so, yeah, definitely. There's a in the OG series, he meets various people. He goes to Las Vegas, you know, there's these sort of crime lords. There's all sorts of things going on in it. But you can easily just start here. It's like starting at Mad Max, the second movie. You can do it. It's easy. And it's much more prone to this sort of kind of action sequence. I found that Rook was a denser artistic read, in no way less good. But I think that sort of the action scenes in Geiger are much more, choreographed almost.
I think to say something to that, Tony, is because I think Rook feels very claustrophobic. He's in places that everything is over the top of him.
A lot of exposition as well.
Yeah. Whereas Geiger is almost like he's big sky country. Do you know what I mean? There's the ground and then there's just nothing above. Do you know what I mean?
He's a man walking across country. So the thing is, he's got these two rods, what they call nuclear rods, stuck in his back.
Yeah,
when he pulls them out, he becomes this green glowing, you know, incredibly powerful creature.
What that design feels like to me, I don't know if you guys got this vibe as well, because the story is a very sort of like post-apocalyptic Western, you know, Book of Eli, kind of like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
His design, it partly makes me think, did Gary Frank create this when he was a little kid, and now he's getting
I thought exactly this. I feel like he drew on a copy book, you know, 30 years ago, and then now he's getting to do it as a character. That's exactly what it feels like to me, especially because it would have been in the time of like Mad Max, and there's a lot of Fist of the North Star. Like his little sidekick Ella is exactly like the sort of the sidekick that Ken sort of reluctantly takes on in Fist of the North Star. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. Like, no, you can't come with me. No, you can't come with me. Knowing he's eventually going to let him come along with him, and they're going to go on an adventure together. You know, we've kind of seen these elements, but it really works.
There's a callback as well to the knight character who becomes his sidekick, because he's called at one point a nuclear knight, I believe he calls himself. That's a play on the Atomic Knights, which is these OG DC characters. Ask the Earth 2 guys about that. Pete and David, they know all about that. But the knowing Geoff Johns is like a massive DC nerd, isn't he? I think that's a little callback to that as
that's
well.
A callback.
Yeah.
It's good because kind of you see the character change, make a change in the book of when that Nuclear Knight character sort of becomes his squire in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
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 And he sort of pushes him to make a sort of decision that he doesn't realize he wants to make, and then suddenly we're off on this adventure by the end of it.
Which there's a massive Man of La Mancha thing going on here, I think.
Yeah.
But much more violence.
Yeah.
I think Clock, he's got that bloody the radioactive symbol and he's kind of like where his belly button is. I didn't see that kind of in the design.
And that's like one of those classic, that's why another thing that makes me think he designed this years ago.
Yeah.
And now like he's comfortable enough to draw a character that's got a skull for a face and everything else. One thing about the art as well. I mean, Gary Frank, we love Gary Frank.
And
always a class act.
So many great series and seeing the development of that. I think one of the strongest bits of this, and I think his action scenes have never been better than in this book, what I read in here. Just absolutely phenomenal. But the thing that got me the most was the emotive acting on the faces, facial acting.
There's a lot of Steve Dillon in his faces, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, that sort of fact that, you know, Steve Dillon being known for the acting, right?
He's the daddy in any of that.
I see a lot of that. I see a lot of that in Gary Frank. I think he's a little bit, he's in the tradition of the sort of Bolland, Gibbons type, you know, British artist, like where there's a little element of but wouldn't like to say not stiffness necessarily, but they maybe not as bombastic as like they don't warp or distort the figures in the way like a Jack Kirby would or anything. Like everything's very grounded.
And it's a lot in the eyes, isn't it? The eyes does so much.
Like, and lots of rendering, that beautiful like rendering and stuff, you know.
They're very Bolandesque in that, I think. You're
right. Bolandesque, exactly.
There's one scene where which is just two panels on a page, because all of these books are very much sort of like, you want to see something fucking glorious, look at this. Don't worry about the words. It's like that. Is Geiger? There's these guys attack them. They basically ambush them, and they're beating up the squire and the dogs. Barney gets involved, and then with a just out of the smoke, Geiger all nuked up is jumping through the air with both of the sticks in his hand, and you see like the assault guys sort of reacting to it. And the next panel is the squire on the floor, just looking up, smiling, just saying, "It's absolutely glorious." And that's such a moment in the book. It tells you everything about that
I think they need that character, because otherwise Geiger can be a little bit one note.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you have Lone Wolf and Cub, right, I haven't read it as much as you guys, but a lot, and certainly those sort of style of stories, these stoic characters are so stoic that they need someone to play off. Otherwise, it's just following... this is a harsh way to put it, but a block of indestructible wood around the world. You need someone to sort of give the world life, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's what C-3PO and R2-D2 are. Mm. You know, there's that sort of thing is added all the time. Yeah, and what is it with people with skull faces being like tragic, troubled men? They're always tragic and troubled, aren't they? Like Ghost Rider, all these people, there's something going on with them there.
Would you be if you had a skull for a face?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty badass.
I was surprised, because I had like I was aware that Geiger was a series beforehand, and not just because I heard Tony reading it, but I saw it in like the Comixology browsing and stuff. I was aware there was a book called Geiger. So when this came around, I was like, oh, is that this?
Same thing, yeah.
But going into it, I didn't know he could turn back into his normal. You know, he had a human look as well. You know, that was a surprise.
That's great, because otherwise, if you're stuck like that as a character all the time, it's very can be difficult.
It's hard to hide, isn't it? Yeah, if people are chasing you, you're not going to be able.
Massive.
A bit overpowered as well if he was that all the time, because he seems to be basically indestructible when he's in this form.
And he can be tracked as well, can't he? I think they allude to that quite a lot in this, don't they? The also massive coincidence. That's his last name, isn't it?
That makes me laugh.
How does that
like Edward happen? Edward Nigma all over it?
The other thing I was watching some of the making of videos, and did you see this page? Which when I saw it, I thought, oh, that's a bit of a fucking get out of a double page spread.
Okay.
And I thought, well, that's a bit of a waste of two pages.
That also, it doesn't gel with the rest of the art, because that feels like a big Photoshop job.
But that's a photograph. He wanted something
So he found a shed. Rob Lee, this is. He found a shed or something, like an outhouse that was all rusted, and he took a picture of it, and he introduced the Geiger title page into it. But I did think a bit unnecessary.
I didn't like that page. I really kind of...
Yeah, nice idea. I mean, now I know that, a nice idea.
Improves it for me. Yeah, but not totally. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. If you get like a kind of high-res texture of some a rusted thing and then kind of make it the text out of it in Photoshop look like it's popping out.
Yeah.
For me, there's not much difference to you taking the photo and doing it yourself. I'm not. Yeah, but it's a minor quibble.
Yeah.
Barney, cool. The two-headed dog. I mean, there's a dog companion. Got to love that, haven't you? It's always going to be good. Plus,
I do worry about him, though. I worry about him a lot.
Yeah. Apparently, he's got radioactive guts, hasn't he? Isn't that when he's eating something, Geiger says something to him. He goes, "You can eat that because you've got."
Right.
Because he's like
pretty much eat anything. Yeah.
It's a bit like Marley and Me, though. I can't watch it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I worry too.
You're waiting for it to happen. I Am Legend and all that. Yeah.
My wife does look up that site whenever there's a dog or a cat.
Yeah. Does the dog die?
So does the dog die?
Yeah. So Geiger is another just absolute. Thumbs up, I think, across the board. You know, I think, and certainly we liked all of these, but a lot of you people out there, you might prefer one of those, but I think there's certainly you'll find one of these titles that you'll follow.
It's massively subjective.
These core titles are very strong titles. Another thing that Geiger has towards the back, as I was just flicking through now, it has the timeline of the unnamed. Now, we were talking about these universes and what it's like. Okay, so... it says here with the text here, throughout history, unlikely and strange heroes have risen and fallen. These men and women are a mystery. Their identities and lives are secret. But for a great evil to be stopped, their stories must be told. From a radioactive family man in the near future to a British assassin during the American Revolution to a robotic killing machine seeking its creator and more, they are the unnamed fighting the unknown war. And the timeline is this, because just to give a clarification for us all, starts 1776. Redcoat becomes immortal. Spoilers, but we'll talk about that in a second. 1864. The Northerner begins his hunt. That's a title that, obviously, are these comics that have come later? Or are they part of the universes? Do you know what I mean? 1944. The Monster is made. 1972. Junkyard Joe comes online. 1997, Widow X has her revenge. I love the way they say this because there's mystery to it. I'm trying to figure out what it is. Present day, First Ghost is captured on film.
Now, that's interesting. Just quickly, if I can jump in on First Ghost, because it's not a comic we've seen yet. That's the Brad Meltzer gig. And that, I just noticed, is obviously meant to be Pennsylvania Avenue, isn't it? The White House.
Right.
Now, Brad Meltzer is a mate of... who's the president... I think he was friends with George W. Bush.
Okay.
And he's written a series of comics about American presidents for kids. So this is something to do with a president.
Okay.
Yeah, like
who's a ghost. It's got to be.
Ghost president.
Yeah.
Ghost president. Yeah. Starring Bill Cosby.
Or it might be the wife first.
I was about to say first ghost. Yeah. It might be the wife or husband. It could be, it can be either. Yeah. So present day, First Ghost is captured on film. 5 years from now, they've dated these books a little bit by saying that. 5 years from now, the unknown war erupts. And 25 years from now, Geiger walks across America. So that's the timeline for the unnamed. It seems like Geiger is the most recent. Do you know what I mean? If you think of present day in the story timeline, Geiger's... How is everything going to catch up with that? Presumably
the unknown war taps into Geiger. Because if like it's a nuclear post-apocalyptic
the war that
nuclear
creates waste, then. Yeah,
yeah, that's the war that creates.
Yeah. Tarek Geiger's in it somewhere as a human.
Okay,
but if you look at the image of the red coat in that, he's holding a modern gun, as well.
Yeah.
So
speaking of which, should we get to the third and final of the core titles, Red Coat?
That's it. And that time they got 1944, The Monster was made. Can't remember. Nothing really happened in 1944. It's a bit of
be fine.
Quiet time of the world.
Yeah. So. Sexy Nazi ladies. Isla She-Wolf for the SS. Yeah,
Monster of the SS. See they
now.
Right, itself.
Redcoat number one. It's interesting because Rook and Geiger both have a sort of synopsis on the inside cover. Redcoat doesn't have a synopsis on the inside of a cover. It doesn't have a setup. It does have a line that is hilarious. It just says, immortal, mercenary, kind of a tool. Yeah. which made me laugh. This is Brian Hitch and Andrew Curry are the inkers. Jeff Johns and Brian Hitch are the creators of this one. Brad Anderson is the colorist. Rob Lee is the letterer. Brian Cunningham, editor-in-chief. A couple of different covers. And Steve Blackworth is the designer. Each one of these has given a distinctive look, by the way.
Do you think they want Charlie Hunnam to play him in the movie?
Well, see, good shout.
It could be. I think he's a little too tall and lean for Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it could be a Fassbender.
Yeah.
Someone like that.
He reminds me a bit of Charlie Hunnam when I look at it.
Yeah.
I see that. Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
But meet Simon Pure, the newest unnamed hero, created by comic all-stars Jeff Johns and Brian Hitch. British Redcoat, an all-round rogue, Simon mysteriously became immortal in 1776 after a run-in with the clandestine cabal known as the Founding Fathers, which included George Washington, John Hancock, and many other prominent American Revolutionary War leaders. Since that fateful day, Simon has led a life of adventure and avarice, rubbing elbows, and sometimes fists, with many of history's most renowned figures, including his nemesis, Benedict Arnold, Albert Einstein, Annie Oakley, and many more. One thing they can all agree on, they never want to see him again. But what are the true origins and extent of Simon's power and the mysterious organization behind them? And how has it secretly shaped America and the world? Simon's on a quest to find out. So, this one, which...
He does a lot of girls as well, a lot of sex.
Yeah.
Okay. As an immortal.
So
there's a lot of sex.
We've got the classic immortal warrior story.
So it's very more cocky, isn't it? But it's also very... This is the most Bondesnay book of them all for me.
Okay.
It screams BD book to me.
Yeah.
Which is very wise, you know. Let's sell it to the French market ASAP. Let's get, you know...
This one... Go on, Dan.
There's a flag that he's wearing where he's got like the United States stripes with the Union Jack in the corner. I've never seen that kind of thing before. Presumably that's just for the comic. That's not kind of like...
Yeah, they make a point in one of the interviews I saw saying there's no historical accuracy here.
I was thinking
Indiana Jones or something. They just use a time period. So
I was very much getting like an Indiana Jones kind of, you know, cocky,
yeah,
bit of a loud mouth.
Yeah, he's that sort of like lovable rogue kind of bit of a bastard, but you know, he coasts through on his charm type of Byronic figure. But yeah, he's
will
great.
Be the right finger to push. Yeah.
If Rook was that sort of almost like a Batmanish like stereotype of like person with gadgets, etc., in a post-apocalyptic world, and Geiger was, you know, the wandering samurai kind of stereotype,
the man with no name.
This is the swashbuckler cad. Just an absolute, but he just happened. This is a guy that doesn't deserve the powers that he's been given, but they do come at a price. Which this is a thing that because normally we have like immortal, they're going to be invulnerable, you know, things like that. The thing that kept making me laugh was the amount of times he dies. He keeps dying and then coming back to life, isn't he? Waking up as people are burying him, or like just the reactions. You see a lot of Hitch sort of reactions of people going, "What the fuck? He's not dead."
Yeah, that's good. Well done. This is the Archer and Armstrong of this series for me.
Yeah,
you know, bit of humor, bit of a cad, and immortal. You know, we see different periods of history with him in them, that sort of thing.
Hitch is having a great time just drawing this stuff. You know, again, it's like this is just what he was excited to draw. You can tell.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hitch is seemingly very busy at the moment. We've had him do that Ultimates thing. He's done this.
Yeah.
He's apparently, as well. He's a very fast artist.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
This was the one that... It took felt a bit wordier to begin with for me. I don't know, the rhythm caught up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh God, we're getting a lot of words here, I think, because in the other two books it was, and this was the third one I read. This was
the stodgier read of the three for me.
Yeah,
I think.
Completely. Yeah. And I was like, oh wow, because within 10 pages, 10, 15 pages, you've learned probably about like the founding father, you know, these cults, the magic, what's going on, you know, and because there's another thing of I'm Simon Pure, this is what happened to me.
Yeah, you feel like the Ben Franklin and the cult stuff, like someone like a Mignola would have handled that in a more elegant and more minimalist way.
That's a good point.
And you wouldn't have needed the sort of voiceover. I did like the voiceover occasionally. I liked him kind of talking casually to you. But you're right, it was a little overly wordy in some ways.
You're right,
you
man.
Could have let the visuals play out.
Yeah, there's so Mignola that Mignola would have dealt with that so differently. You're right, mate.
So I didn't mind this one. It wasn't like, oh my God, I really want to read more Redcoat, I've got to say. I was like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
There's like a bit when he's running from the army. It felt like loads of times in the comic, it could be like, yeah, record scratch. It's like, yeah, that's me. How did I find myself in this scenario?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's like
it
that
is that tone, actually.
Yeah,
it is exactly that tone.
Yeah, it is that sort of like, stop. Wait a moment.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how I got here. That kind of...
and it's almost going, hey, look how crazy... Isn't this crazy? Look how crazy
is it crazy?
Like,
look,
it is crazy. Just let it be confident that it's crazy.
Yeah. I agree up until he meets Einstein. And then I think this becomes more coherent. You're right, Dan. He was just like running about and getting in trouble and running about and dying and blah, 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 blah. And then he meets Einstein. And I then thought...
Who's a kid when he meets him, isn't he? Einstein's a kid,
Then I think now there's a story.
We've got
a story.
It takes a while. But by the end, I think you're right, Tony. As soon as it hits that sort of pivot, the downhill of the rest of the issues, so much more fun that by the end I was like, okay, I want to see, when's the next episode? Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
If he'd have been surrounded by soldiers without meeting Einstein at the end of the first issue, I'd be like massively... I'm not fussed.
Because they have to be careful, because these sort of characters that are funny, and I like the fact it's like, oh, he's kind of a tool. You need to be careful writing those kind of things because they could be unlikable. They could be absolutely fucking unbearable.
It's a fine line to tread. You kind of got to give them enough sort of roguish kind of charm that you want to kind of stick with them, but also realize they're a character that has to make changes to become good.
When does he learn? But you've seen like for quite a few years, he's learned fucking nothing.
He's been twat,
I do like the details in terms of like the creation of these characters and like, you know, whether it be the designs or their powers and, you know, what they're giving them. There's some tweaks to the sort of immortal thing that I quite like about it. This is the one that's also magic and arcane things going on. I like the fact that when he got these powers, he had no money and he was hungry. And like, so the moment he got those powers, he would eternally be like that. So I think it's like, no, whenever he eats, because he hasn't had a meal in like 5 days, no matter what he eats, he still feels hungry, doesn't he? Like all the time. He's always destined to not have any money. He's always, you know, so it's like, it's almost that sort of vicious cycle of like.
But you'd want to be hungry all the time, wouldn't you? Because have you ever had like a really great meal and you're absolutely full and don't feel like you could eat anymore? Being like that for eternity, I would fucking hate it.
But if you're hungry,
permanently constipated.
But
if you're hungry and got no money,
that's not great.
It would be rough.
Yeah, Dan thinks that's all right. He'll be standing later at the local elections.
If you've got no money, you shouldn't be allowed to eat. What's the problem?
Yeah, why don't you get a job?
don't at me, Simon.
But the best wraparound cover as well, guys, for me. I really like the wraparound, which you probably haven't seen because you're
really
nice
astounding.
Still, yeah. Really nice. Yeah.
The art's just beautiful.
He's a real virtuoso, isn't he? He's just amazing.
He's a big lump. You've seen him. He's a fucking big geezer. I didn't realise Hitch was such a big geezer. I've only ever seen him sitting down. Yeah.
As a side note, I do like all those characters. Those character cards they do that kind of hark back to the old Marvel Universe books. You know, who's who in the Marvel, and you used to get like the block of text on the left, and then you get like a full figure of them on the right, and then maybe an action panel or something in their past. And they do them, I think they did them for all the characters.
Yeah.
It's great.
And some of the characters we haven't seen as well. If you go to the site, they do the Northerner and stuff like that as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Is he called the Northerner? That's right.
Yeah, the Northerner. Yeah, yeah.
What does he do? Just complain about there being no gravy on his chips or something? Yeah.
Never wears a jacket. T-shirt in the middle of winter.
Yeah, it's grim up north.
It's certainly interesting.
Manchester's better than London
because this is the title out of the three as well. The character out of the three that because of what he is, he links things. doesn't he? Because he's mentioned that's in clever other
about
books.
It. Yes.
Yeah.
He's mentioned in other books. There are other characters that interact with him who are obviously probably going to affect other things. So,
see, I think when he meets Geiger, I don't think he's going to be the same character because they hint at him being this fucking nightmare.
Yeah,
don't they, right, Geiger? Okay. Yeah. I think he's going to be a changed man by the time we get to the far future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, after an atomic war, you'd imagine he would undergo some kind of.
Oh well, if he lived through that, if he can't fucking die,
cut his ponytail off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he'll tell. But I hope when you see the modern version of him, it's satisfying. It's not just a Age of Apocalypse like re. You know.
Have you ever had a ponytail, Vince?
No. Even when I had long hair, I just I put a lovely hairband in, and
I mean, he could hang around Shoreditch, and where he's dressed like that, he wouldn't stand out at all, would he?
Yeah. See, it's like that time I went. Do you remember when I went to LCAF and there was that bloke dressed as a fucking, like, 1940s scout? You remember that? I took a picture of him.
Yeah.
That wasn't even fucking ironic.
No, just
get away with anything in that fucking place.
So we've got three different flavours of book for the first line. This is the action comedy, which is, when I read it, it kind of caught me, actually, because I didn't realise until after I finished it that the other two were so serious, aren't they? They kind of
right. Yeah, I get you.
Do you think there was any crossover when they said, like, right, I'm going to be making this book, and tonally they think, well, I've got to try and do something different from the other people. So it was like, oh, my book's going to be relentlessly grim. So, oh yeah, my book's going to be fucking relentlessly grim too. So yeah, oh, my book's going to be fucking relentlessly grim.
You can see Jeff sitting there thinking, fucking hell, we need a book with boobs in to cheer people.
Yeah,
up.
We need a bit of humour and stuff.
Yeah.
And imagine grim. If say four of us kind of came together and said, right, we're going to tell these stories. My one's going to be about a deep look at the human condition. My one's going to be about slavery and stuff. It's like, well, fucking easy. Like,
yeah.
My one's about my one's about Auschwitz. Tony, can you do one about tits? Yeah, no worries.
Auschwitz.
So
that's the worst joke you've ever.
That is fucking awful. Why are you still on this show, you absolute fucking beast?
Oh my god.
Jesus.
The porn they dared not make. Apology. Oh my god. Oh, my aunt doesn't listen to this.
Does she? We need the numbers. No, but anyway, for a launch title, I mean, three books, do you think that's a good number to launch something like this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very right, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, normally when you see launches, they're about six to ten, aren't they? Normally, that's what we see. Do you think
you know there's got to be two or three duds, and it's just a matter of time, you know? So, like, just go in there strong.
So, it's more all killer, isn't it? Sort of no filler.
How many times have we had people on this show have gone, right, we're going to fucking change the landscape of comics? Mm-hmm. And then they disappeared in 2 years, Tom.
Yeah.
And that's
what do you think of it compared to the Energon universe, which is like, I know they're established IP, but like in terms of like they're trying to do this new cohesive universe.
Yeah.
And so it's not that with a sort of showrunner type figure at the top
and they've been
brilliant. I mean, they've been so great.
Yeah.
I feel like Energon's got more momentum, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's got more name to it.
Yeah.
The thing about having IP stuff like that, and this is just the pessimistic bastard in me, is I hope it does so well that they keep hold of it for 10 to 15 years, etc. Because if things go, like, for some reason, the rights go back to someone else and it goes to a different publisher, all of this is for naught. It just becomes,
it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because if you get an IP, you're bringing on all the past fans and everything, but you're a limited amount of the profits and rights are tied up with it. Mm. Whereas like stuff like this, you're starting afresh, but everything's yours.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, you put a few quid behind it, man.
Yeah, well, totally. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Get that talent on. You're talking millions, I've got to guess.
Yeah. But Ghost Machine, obviously, April was Ghost Machine month when they had those three titles. It says they're going to be at Fan Expo Philadelphia, which is that yet to happen or has that just happened? I can't remember.
Not sure.
And they do say thank you for checking out the books. It's nice to have it like when you launch something, just sort of say thank you for reading. They do say that their second line of titles is launching in October.
Oh, right. That's quite a delay.
But we'll be here every month with Geiger, Redcoat, and Rook.
Oh, there you go.
Exodus until then. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, how many months is that? What? That's another 4-5 issues? Is that what we're talking?
The thing is that they're a different breed, the second lot. If it's going to be Hyde Street, Rocket Fellas, whatever it's called, and the other, the two-hander, I'm forgetting the name of, Hornsby and Halo, they're a different kettle to me. They're almost, Hornsby and Halos is almost all ages. Rocket Fellows feels that way too.
Yeah.
You know, slightly sort of, how we'll call it, more YAI, more YA type art. And Hyde Street is just not far off that, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost like a different line.
Yeah. How many titles do you think are going to be in the next one? Do you reckon they're going to
I think it'll be another three.
You reckon three? I reckon there might be four.
We'll get that. First Ghost as well, won't we?
When on this, when you look at the issues, there is a lovely picture at the back that goes alongside this message that talks about April being Ghost Machine Month, which is a montage of all of the characters that are planning to come in one sort of almost a lithograph like format. And no matter how different all these characters look, I tell you, that looks like a fucking good universe. They all fit together, even like the.
Yeah, I'm digging it.
They're funny. Funny one. What was the Hornsby and is it Halo and Hornsby?
Yeah.
That's now what's to come, obviously, which we get an idea of with the one shot that we've all most of us have kind of read, and we've touched a little bit on the titles and these ones. There's Junkyard Joe, which you can cut. Is that actually having a title, or can you only read the preview?
I think it's. And you can get the series. I think it's in a collection now.
Yeah.
Mate, that's the one I keep saying you should read, Vince.
Yeah.
It's the nicest of them all.
Yeah.
It's a really touching one. Junkyard Joe is a comic strip, a newspaper strip, and he appears in the newspaper, and there's this old dude who's drawn it for years, and he's sort of remembered, and then the robot he's written about turns up at his door on the run. And it's just really well done. And these two kids join in, and it's brilliant, really good. Yeah,
nice. They've got this on Comixology, haven't they? Global Comics.
Yeah,
have they got Junkyard Joe on Global Comics?
Yeah, it's on there. I'm looking now. Yeah, it is on there.
Oh, right. Okay.
In the Fact Files, his first appearance was in Geiger number 6, volume 1.
Yeah.
One thing I liked.
I can't remember, but I think it might have been him reading the comic.
Oh, interesting.
Is that right? I might be wrong there. Might be wrong, but yeah.
Another thing I like.
Yeah, the kids are watching the kids are watching a cartoon of him or something, aren't they?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that sort of synergy of these sort of things. One thing I did notice is in Geiger issue 1, I don't know why it made my heart sing that there's a little. They mention something. He says something, and there's a little box in the corner that says. See Ghost Machine one shot issue 1. Do you know what I mean? The little star, the little asterisk we used to always get in Marvel comics. Love that. I really missed that. I forgot. Like, see this issue to see what they're talking about. It's not super important to what you're talking about, but if there's a reference, if you want a reference,
man,
go
I loved
back and
read it. I just kind of think that the corporate memory isn't there at Marvel and DC anymore to do that.
It's
weird on the cover page of that Junkyard Joe. It makes reference to Mad Ghost. There's a Mad Ghost logo. Do you think that was what they originally called it and they pulled it back?
Oh, okay.
Could be. I did just see something in the one shot.
Because of Mad Cave.
Obviously, lays out the issues to come, and they have the file cards of obviously the unnamed universe, like the Northerner, all those ones I was talking about. First Ghost is President Sarah Nash. First appearance is in First Ghost issue 1. And it says, well, I'm not going to, I'll tell you what, read the one shot and you can see the fact file, but that's, it's about a female president, I think. And,
cool.
Because yeah, on that montage image, there's a little old lady ghost. Is that?
Could be.
Yeah.
And this one shot, of course, has some, tie-ins and stuff, as well as mentioning like the family universe. Cause as well as all this post-apocalypse nonsense, you've got the family.
Okay,
universe.
Fellas. Yeah.
Which is the Rocket Fellas, which it's Oscar Isaac, isn't it? The main dude in that is Oscar Isaac.
Oh, is it?
That's what it looks like to me. I just think, oh, give him a tash. He's a handsome man. And Halo and Hornsby, which for me, I read that short, and I'm, do you know what, that feels like just something I'm just going to have fun with. Feels very different to everything else, but that's the next one I'm looking forward to. And obviously Hyde Street, which is obviously all the horror ones. There's going to be a few titles in Hyde Street, I think, isn't there? Or is that just let's see. They've got a wonderful, in the one shot, they've got a double page spread which is done like an old advert, where you can see Mr. X-Ray Glasses and the monster and all this other stuff.
I wonder
stuff.
If it's like a horror anthology storytelling thing.
I think it is based around one place.
Like a Twilight Zone thing, yeah.
One place in time. So there's lots to look forward to. I think if it keeps up with this kind of quality, then it's hopefully strength to strength, isn't it? That's what we...
And again, Jeff, you know our email.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, what do we hope to see from something like this? Which, when we're after reading these three issues... What do we hope for Ghost Machine?
All I can ever hope for these days, and mostly it's a fucking ill-kept hope, is the fact it keeps running and it's good quality. That's all I ever want now, man.
Same, yeah. All just consistency. Yeah. Consistency.
Exactly. The artists and writers stay on it for long enough to actually, you know, seed in some interesting stories over a period of years, and not just six issues and they're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, in this world where there's so many different, you know, money making opportunities for some of these bigger artists, and even if there is their own IP, which we've seen millions of times when we've seen in the solicitations, all that artist has got their own comic, four issues and then they're gone, even though they created them themselves. Do you think this is more a case of they're so ingrained in what they've created that they're going to be here for?
Hopefully, man.
12 issues.
I hope it's a massive fucking success.
Yeah. I mean, doing these kind of artwork is an awful lot of work. So maybe.
Totally, yeah.
But they have done long runs, you know. They are, like, I mean, Hitch is proven, you know, and so is Gary Frank. And, you know, so they're not these, like, I don't know, Travis Charest, it takes, like, 10 years to do two pages type of guys.
Yeah. You
know?
They've definitely got the chops, and they've earned their spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the best to it, man. Hope
a lot of good comics coming out at the moment, guys.
Yeah.
There really is.
Yeah.
So
I've got issue two of this in my pull list today.
It was
Batman, Dylan Dog.
Oh, so brilliant. So good.
So, you know, it's a joy to be able to talk about this sort of thing and then say to people, put this on your radar, because it's good comics. They want to make good comics. They want to make good stories, and they clearly care about what they're writing. So it's a thumbs up all round for Ghost Machine. Get on and see. I think the rest of the year is going to be... I'm looking forward to October already, seeing what else is...
Yeah.
Hyde Street's blatantly... They're going to do a Halloween Hyde Street release, surely. Something like that.
Maybe. That'd be great, yeah.
Mr. X Respects. I wonder if he can see through ladies' clothing.
Probably. we'll have to get the creators on to ask them all these questions. But yes, before we jump on to the shout outs,
we've got a guest.
Yeah, we got a guest, and we basically gave you homework away from making your own comics.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Very enjoyable homework.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at a picture of you, actually. It says Cahill in financial hot water again.
Yes.
Looking very much like Andrew Tate.
Yeah. Oh God.
It's in the sort of I suppose the meta world of that comic, No Second Chance. It's me and my friend are sort of B movie producers of the 1980s in the vein of canon. So there are sort of some clippings. You know, I think Lee is buying Elvis's skeleton, and you know, we're trying to cast Diana in our latest movie and stuff like that. You know, so.
So your influence is very much like in that sort of wheelhouse, that kind of like.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I kind of like that sort of trash art kind of nexus, I suppose. You know, it's kind of what I'm sort of interested in. You know, and I love kind of the 80s trash kind of VHS. Stuff I'm very interested in, and yeah, so that's kind of where my heart lies, I would say. Yeah.
I
mean, it falls no second chance. Was we reviewed it a few weeks ago, and we've all read it, but it fell into that thing about you having a laugh and then deciding to make it into a comic, which is kind of idea for me.
Yeah, I just texted my friend. So my friend Lee, why he's got like the writer credit on there? Like I just said, I kind of want to do like the ultimate straight to video action movie from the 1980s that you would go, you know, you go in, you know, Lethal Weapon's been taken out. You've already seen Die Hard, you know, so you're left with, I don't know, Dolph Lundgren in something. And but like the best, and the covers of those would always overpromise and it would so rarely deliver, you know. Sometimes you'd get a gem, but a lot of time it was shite. And I just wanted to kind of actually deliver on it, but also do it in 22 pages and draw it as fast as humanly possible, you know. So it's got this kind of sketchy, dashed out look to it. So I'm not drawing deliberately badly, but at the same time, I'm like, if I'm going to draw a page in like an hour and just smash this thing out as fast as humanly possible. And we just went to the pub to plot it out. We sat in a pub in Soho and we're like, okay, what about this? What kind of a guy is he like? You know, I always love the beginning of Lethal Weapon where Mel Gibson is like living on a beach in a shack and it's presented as like he's this suicidal guy. And I'm like, that's my ideal life. That looks like that looks fucking amazing.
So, I was so sad when they fucked up his caravan as well.
I know. Yeah.
I thought that's fucking brilliant. And the dog escaped through a panel in the bottom of the.
Was that in two? Yeah.
That's number two,
yeah.
Because he's there with Patsy Kensit, isn't he?
Yeah.
Of course he is. Yeah. We see Patsy Kensit's nipple.
Yes. Take the piss out of that in Loaded Weapon, didn't they?
They do, yeah. And it's Bruce Willis.
Not many people reference Loaded Weapon these days, do they?
But was that your first go? It wasn't your first go at comics, surely, Zach?
So I had published my comic Positron, which was the continuation of like a comic I made as a kid. I think every comics creator, right? We make comics as kids. I did like a 50-page Batman graphic novel that is like one of the cringiest things you'll ever see in your life. Now, because it's extremely indebted to Frank Miller and like.
I don't know, mate. Have you been to Thought Bubble recently?
But yeah, so I put out Positron, which is my kind of space adventure romp. It's kind of Flash Gordon meets kind of Mobius, and you know, it's kind of a fun and silly thing. Yeah, and then I've done this now, and then. We're working on a sequel, No Second Chance Part 2, aka Monkey Witness.
So do you like you and your mate met in a pub again?
Yeah, that one. That's how we do it.
So this is No Second Chance Part 2 instead of No Second Chances.
It's No Second Chance, aka One More Chance, aka Monkey Witness. that's the full title.
Amazing.
the idea is like he's now, you know, if this was a Stallone kind of career, right? You know, the first one is Cobra, and the second one is the ill-advised comedy, you know, Stop My Mom Will Shoot.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So he has to team up with a monkey to take down the Yakuza.
God.
That's great.
That's all right. Yeah. No tropes there.
Yeah.
No monkey was harmed. But you always seem to be very active on the Slack, putting another page up. You're doing a new sort of strip.
Brutalists. I'm doing a Patreon. I kind of got into the idea of doing like a daily strip. It isn't daily, but there's times when it's kind of near daily. But that was because I was about to start on the No Second Chance and I broke my hand and I just bought an iPad. So I just got Procreate. So I thought, well, like, I'll just try a different sort of project. And I literally drew initially by putting the stylus into my cast and just kind of drawing it that way. So the early pages are a little bit more rough. But I've had this idea in my head for a long time, kind of riffing on the British spy shows like The Prisoner and The Avengers. And I just had this idea in my head for a long time. And I kind of went from there. And I've ended up doing 46 pages of this.
Wow, that's awesome.
And it's now taken on this look of like a classic newspaper strip. With the kind of screen tones and I'm trying to go a bit kind of tough, you know, minimalist type of look with it. But I'm actually really happy with it. And I've now got it sort of just about got it collected in a load of sort of little mini zines and comics to send out to the people on my Patreon.
Brilliant.
And it's going to go, I posted a picture in the Slack. It's going to go in this sort of like dossier thing, like as if, you know, you're the spy and you've been handed this information. And the little zines are not numbered, so you have to figure it out yourself what order things go in and that kind of thing.
Awesome.
They're trying to push the idea of, like, you know, in my own, like, sort of lo-fi way, push the idea of, like, what a comic can be. Obviously, you don't see this stuff because there's no way to make this economically viable. Like, there's no way I'm making any money on this whatsoever, but it's just a fun idea that I want to do, and it just feels a bit different.
That's the best kind of comics, if you ask me. Mm.
Do it for fun, man. That's great. Yeah. But I don't think I know what your day job is, Zach. Are you able to say? Or
yeah, well, so I write for a travel magazine.
Oh, right.
And so I've done that for about 12 years.
Is that how I saw you jumping into a lake recently on your...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in Oslo. Yeah, I was right. on a fjord, staying in a 100-year-old hotel in a town of 25 people. And I had a bath, Kaiser Wilhelm's bath. And then jumped into the sea. That was great. Yeah, it was an amazing trip.
Brilliant.
But then I'm also in the fitness. I'm a personal trainer as well. That's kind of my
hey, nice one.
My money maker, really. My kind of bread and butter. It gives me actual time to do the creative stuff on the side.
Nice work. Yeah. And then of course we've got the triumphant fucking Predator versus West Ham.
Yes.
Just I know you basically played through it on the Slack. That's how I got to see it. You
Page. I was in Norway. I had managed to travel to Norway to go to this place on an expired passport, because in the move, I'm moving house, I took an expired passport accident, ended up in Norway. They were like, well, because you've got an EU passport, we can let you in, but you're not going to be able to get back to London. So I ended up having to then go to Oslo to the Irish embassy, get a temporary passport, and then I was just left kind of with not much to do. Because I'd missed the end of this press trip, so I thought, well, I'll make this zine. So I just drew it. I drew it in a few hours on my iPad. I'm quite happy with it. Yeah,
it's awesome.
I'll send you guys a copy for sure.
Oh, yeah, man.
This
is exactly what we got so excited about with Matt a few weeks ago, didn't we? With the zines,
he got me excited about this. He lit like a nuclear bomb in my head I can just draw all this shit, print it out on an A3, unfold it, and I've got a comic, and I don't have to be dealing with like printers and people who screw you around. And I was like, wow, I could just do it. You know, and the freedom of that was kind of amazing to me. So yeah, I'm doing more of that kind of thing now. And he really, because I love his stuff. He sent me a bunch of his stuff, and it's just so free and fast and kind of energetic, you know?
Yeah.
He still hasn't sent us that June one, Dan.
No, yes.
I need to have a word with him about that.
Yeah.
The other thing, Dan and I are doing a comic. We should do it like that.
I agree.
That would work really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's an energy and there's a fun to it, isn't it? I think I think sometimes as creators, and certainly I'm 100% full foul of this, is we are very much, we are on the roller coaster and we've put the belt on too tight, so we can't move. Whereas sometimes you just got to be like, fuck it, I'm just going to take this ride and see if I fly off the end. You know, that's a weird metaphor.
We're often too tied up with it being absolutely perfectly tidy.
Yeah.
You know, this sort of thing. Just get on with it and get on with it. You know, sometimes I feel a bit like that.
Yeah.
That's what the small press is for, right? You know, you're not, you want to see.
We're not worried about making millions. Yeah. You can do what you like, can't you? That's the idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys always call it a hobby, which I really like. I think that is the way to see it. That's what this is. You're doing it because you're compelled to do it. You're not doing it because you're trying to pay the mortgage, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't remember whether Miller said this on record or off record, because we had a big chat with him afterwards, but Mark Miller said, this is where the things that happen that change the industry come from. You know, and you only got to look at the stuff that came out of, you know, San Francisco in the late 60s, early 70s. This is what those guys were doing.
Yeah. I mean, because it's expressionism. It's a way of expressing your creative side. And like with a hobby, you're doing it because it's fun. You're doing it because you enjoy it. And pretty much all the time that these successful ideas have gotten bigger and they've gone on to bigger and better things, and they've been picked up by publishers or book publishers or whatever, or you've been signed up to anything. A lot of the creators we've spoken to who have gone on to now work with like all these different indie publishers and stuff, it still came down to they just wanted to make comics and they cared about the stories that they were making. So a success story, certainly all the people that we've talked to, that some of them are writing like for the big two now. You know, take a Ram V, you know, making comics because he loved making comics. And now he's a proper, full-on DC writer. It's wonderful.
I think we really need to move away from that narrative that we saw a few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago when we were sort of in the early days of this pod, where people would say 50% of making a comic is selling it. And I'm like, no, fuck all that.
Fuck that.
That's fucking bollocks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
because that stifles you. You start thinking, okay, well, you have to try, and you're trying to reverse engineer what's going to be popular and what are people going to like, and that's anti-creativity.
Yeah, I agree, man. Totally.
I think more. I'd like to take that sentiment and say, like, it's getting into people's hands, getting them reading it.
Yeah.
If you're going to be charitable about that.
Yeah.
But it's a process that stops once you finish making it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it until you create it.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. You got to create it first. And I think it should be, if you just imagine this, you just say you've taken this book and you've gone to a publisher or you've gone to pitch it, and the first question they say, "Who is this book for?" If your answer isn't me, then it's wrong. Then you're doing it wrong.
Exactly.
Which is the way, and when you make it for you, that's normally you can see it a mile off, can't you? When
you're making a book you'd like to see.
Yeah. It's like me and Falpy. We literally just make comics because they make each other laugh. So I just want to give him shit that makes him laugh.
And sometimes you see these Kickstarters and they make like all these bucks and but you see it and it's like, this is just a TNA comic which is made to make a lot of money, but
it's garbage.
It's just absolute fucking garbage every time. But it's there just to make money, isn't it?
Yeah, the things stagnate unless you change that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Massively. Yeah. Look at us ranting on.
Well,
unlike us.
We're preaching. We're preaching the good word of comics and Zach is a disciple. Which is good to see. and also good to see, or something that you should put on your wish list, timelines, etc., is the stuff in the shout-outs. Do we have any shout-outs this week, James?
I do. I've got quite a few. So firstly, thanks to everyone who contributed to our first free comic book collection.
Yay.
That was over 600 pages long, and it came out just a few days ago, if you listen to this on day release. Special thanks to Simon Russell for putting it together and suggesting it as an idea. Big thanks to Simon, as always.
I just want to say, Simon, I do still trust you.
Why don't you trust him?
No, I said I trust him, and on the emails when I sent our comics over, he said, "Well, you know, are you sure you trust me?" You know, and I was like, "No, I trust you, and you do
as much as I trust anyone." Yeah. Stephen Faraday, aka the FZA, for the cover, which is brilliant, and drew a picture of my dog.
Shot it's Nader. Awesome.
So I loved it, and they just did this. It's like brilliant. That's why the Slack is so good. And to Cole Henley for the interior page as well. You all live in infamy. And thank you for drawing my dog. It made me very happy. And he's still pinning me, but it cheered him up. There you go. Thanks to everyone for backing Flesh and Ink as well. That's another big thanks for everyone. And we really, really do appreciate it. We've got probably another 2 weeks just to top and tail it. Then we'll be going for a test print. So we're not far off it. If you are going to TCAF next weekend, go say hi to Falpy. He's going to be there, I think, on the Strangers table with Eddie. Another one. Schism is a 100-page graphic novel now on Kickstarter. The Earth is dying. Your world is a lie. Payback is a bitch. A hero fights her bloody path to freedom in an apocalyptic Spanish winter, covered by Goran Parloff. What a cover for this book.
Yeah
it looks great.
And there was a little, because obviously...
You were giggling over this, weren't you?
Because Parloff posted it on Instagram, and he definitely gave a massive nod to Mark Abnett, friend of the
writer
of the pod, and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I present you Mark Abnett, the best editor in the world. Hail to Mark Abnett."
That's great.
Looking forward to that.
My last one, pre-order Green Archer Comics New Beginnings, newbie-ginnings, a cybersecurity comics anthology. You can go to greenarcher.io. Do you know what the Green Archer is? Anyone?
I do.
Good man. Go on.
Well, I'm doing some work for them.
Oh, do you? Oh, no, I mean, Green Archer. Oh, are you?
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Cool.
Well, the
Green Archer, well, anyone will know this who listened to the NIA episode I did with Alan, is the inspiration for Green Arrow. It was a novel and a couple of... old movies and serials and stuff like that. It's really this is a really interesting comic though, that I think you might be involved in it, Dan, but it's using the concept of comics to talk about cybersecurity. Yeah, we can use comics for anything. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. So go and have a look at that one. They're my ones. There you go, guys.
I did do some comic illustrations for a cybersecurity document pamphlet years ago.
All right.
When you say pamphlet, it makes it sound like you're starting some sort of communist manifesto or something like that.
I had to draw someone like in a with a hoodie on a computer.
Oh, you can't trust hoodies.
like an anonymous thing.
So, it's like if you go into Shutterstock and you got a source like an image about hacking, there's always like someone in a hoodie with blacked out face on the computer, stealing all your passwords or whatever.
So they just look like fat, they just look like fat blokes with acne and eating Pop Tarts, don't they? Really, in reality,
I suspect as much.
But what shout outs do you have, Dan?
I've got Kill the Bride, Love Lies, and Lethal Intentions in the Galaxy's Most Unlikely Venue. That's going from a company I'm part of, TBH Comics. That's Thank you. We need a little push to get it over the line. We've still got another week on it. It's a great comic. I've got some art in it. It's mainly drawn by Kieran Squires. It's fantastic. Go check that one out. We've got The Last Case of Devon and Taylor, issue one, slasher stroke murder mystery. This has smashed its goal. If you back this, you can get some comics that I've made pumped into the bundle. And it looks like a kind of a manga-esque sort of teen kind of Scooby-Doo kind of comic. I'm not sure what my comic's doing in with that, but
I gave it's not Viper, is it?
Yeah, it's Viper. Might be a tonal shift there.
I mean, were you aware that that was happening, Dan? Perhaps you were.
I was sort of aware, but I kind of, you know, like you're in a group of people on a night out. So, we're going down Stringfellows, and okay. And we also, as the Slack group, we're doing May the Fourth Be With You, Force Be With You, where we're drawing really obscure Star Wars characters throughout the month of May.
Is anyone doing that one that looks like their bottom half of their face looks like a pair of bum cheeks?
Could well be. We got like a good 30, 40 characters, and I put them in a randomizer. Most of the names I've not heard of before. And every
people
day
are going,
I
who
Google
the fuck
them.
Is this character? Yeah, one's got a fishbowl on his head or something. That's one.
Yeah, like, I can't remember. Basically, it's like, you know, in the first film, they just like slung a load of stuff on people and said, oh, you're this so-and-so alien now. And it looks like a bloke where he's got a fishbowl, like, a pair of overalls and some stuff stuck on it. It looks really budget. But next month's draw off is June, isn't it?
Ah, right. I might even have a go there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why is it next month?
Because June.
What? No, you said it. He got you.
But he got me.
Oh, I'm such a.
You made me look like a fool.
that Star Wars party reminds me of that time I went to a fancy dress party as a pencil. I feel like that.
Why?
I could have fitted in. Why did I go as a pencil?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all I could get. But the thing is, I had like a helmet and it had a face in it, but I couldn't really move because I was stuck in this pencil costume. You know what I mean?
So how I thought this was set up for a joke. I thought there was a punchline coming.
It was
part of his life.
It's a pencil. I couldn't get my knob out either. I had to take it all off to have a wee. It's like that. Have you got any friends who take all their clothes off to do a poo?
Well, if they do, they never told me.
I got a friend who says he doesn't like his trousers being crumpled on the floor, so he takes all his clothes off so they don't get wrinkled.
All of them.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like his trousers being crumpled.
But he takes his shirt as well.
Why?
Well, there's a bit of dangle going on. You don't want it dangling.
A bit
in the
of
back
dangle? How long? What is he wearing? A nightshirt?
I can't
is he Ebenezer Scrooge?
No, fair enough. Well, that's the future guest lined up.
Yep. We're going
to
have
to jump in the shower afterwards. Right, boy,
we're
going to
have an whole episode about danglers. No, that's something else. Don't Google that, Dan. I can see you looking at your keyboard. Don't Google it. Right, if that's it from the shout outs, unless Dan, have you got any others?
No, that's it.
Oh,
that's
it. Then it's time to recommend some lovely comics for you lovely people to check out in the week ahead or the months ahead or whenever you listen to this. Zach, as the guest, you go first. What would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I'm going to recommend What We Mean by Yesterday by Ben Mara, which is on Patreon. It's a daily kind of, he just does four panels a day. He's been doing this thing for years and years, and it is insane, sort of stream of consciousness stuff. I really, really love his work. But what he's doing now, he's moved into a sequel to his graphic novel, On What, Terror Assaulter, which I don't know if you guys have read that.
Yeah.
But it's just unbelievable.
That fits in with Viper. That fits in with your book.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so great. Like, it's one of those, it's ridiculous to say it, but like, it is, you know, those books and those movies that you read where there's like a before and after, like it's before I read Watchmen and after, there's before I saw Predator and after, but there's like before I read On What and after. it is just unbelievable and just gonzo and insane. So now he's kind of rolling into the sequel to that, and it's great. And it's like, you get your email every day from Patreon when he's posted, and I immediately, he must think I'm a stalker because I immediately read it, like it, and usually comment. He thinks I'm a fucking lunatic, but it's brilliant. Really great.
Yeah, I can make you right on that. In fact, but sadly, I'm not on the Patreon, but I used to read it every day when he was posted, because it was like a month behind on Instagram, wasn't it, at one point?
Yeah,
and it's fucking nuts. I remember that me and Falpy were banging to it, and there was one week where it took him 4 days to take his pants off or something.
Oh yeah, like you are second by second following these characters. Like, you know, it'll be someone walking out of a house for like a day, and you know, but it's, for some reason, it's compelling, you know.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and everyone's so weird in it, and things happen. You're like, what just happened? All of a sudden, yeah.
Like this show, then, very basically.
Good. Yeah, basically like my life.
Yeah. we could say so much from there, but instead we will say, Dan, you don't have a strong recommend this week.
No, I've read, God, a dozen, 15 plus comics this week, and none of them were bad, but none of them were like, they're amazing.
That's completely valid. Because
I didn't want to sort of scrounge up a title and say, "Oh, this is amazing." Then it's like,
exactly. You know, because then it's a bit empty and vapid.
Honesty is everything.
I think you'll be able to help me out with this one.
Yeah,
with my recommendation. Oh, yeah. So there is a war raging in Vietnam, and Nick Fury has been captured by the Viet Cong. At this moment, they don't quite understand that they have in their possession a man who knows enough secrets to damage the United States beyond comprehension. The CIA, however, does realize this, and they can't risk their enemy getting those secrets. So they dispatch the most deadly man in the US Army, Lieutenant Frank Castle. This is issue one of Get Fury from Marvel Comics. In a very rare, Vince is going to recommend a Marvel book.
I know, in a mad.
What a world we live in. Cats and dogs living together.
And it is kind of a Max book, though, isn't it?
So, oh, yeah. Totally. Fuck me.
And it does say on the credits page, it's a Max comic. Get Fury issue one. Writer, Garth Ennis. Friend of the show. Well, he was on the show.
Massive friend of the show.
Penciler, Jason Burrows. Inker, Guillermo Ortego. Colorist, Nolan Woodard. Letterer, Rob Steen. Cover artist, Dave Johnson, one of my favourite cover artists of all
time. Great cover man as well. I actually thought that was Parloff for a minute when I saw that cover first.
And the cover is very much the homage to the classic, the one that's been homaged a million times, so much so that I don't need to see it again, and this one works for me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I've seen this one, it's got that Vietnam.
But this is doing what we talked about earlier, make good comics and we'll read
it.
And this is this going to be Garth's final chapter in the Punisher in Vietnam saga?
I don't know. Breville answers a question. I won't ruin it for everyone on his mailer as to whether Frank's coming back today. It came out.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Imagine yes.
So
maybe not. Okay.
This one is a lot of setup. I tell you what, you know, and obviously so many people have rung their bells for the amount of times like Punishers, but this is the notification of our Punisher mention that we have every week on the show. This is obviously another one of those wonderful flashback kind of storytelling things that the Garth has done with the Punisher, like the Platoon. Obviously Bourne was one of the first ones, but like from the Platoon, which was one of my favourite books of the last 10 years or whatever.
And the Fury book I kind of see as part of that. It's almost like part of the same.
Get Fury feels like if these were movies, Get Fury is the sequel to The Platoon. Do you know what I mean? That kind of the movies went in. And it starts with a Vietnamese veteran who's kind of like telling the story. There's a wonderful sort of... Garth's tone of voice for each of the individual characters is there's such a sort of dexterity to it, because obviously dealing with this war, it's a very difficult situation, very troubling, and he shows different sides to different things all the time. For instance, like the CIA, like Frank Castle has basically been given a job, as it says in the synopsis. Nick Fury and his chopper was shot down. There's only him and two other guys that have been captured. And the CIA basically bring in Mr. Frank Castle, who's been known for... He's part of a recon squad that you see. I don't know if the rest of the recon squad are going to be in this comic, but you see a certain... There's a scene with one of his team and a small dog, which both made me laugh out loud and immediately...
Two MPs that, come up and basically said, we've got to get rid of all the dogs because of rabies.
Yeah. Like, another one of those... Gas clearly, you sort of research, you know, there's a certain element of research, like these are the things you don't think about, but then it's like, oh wow, they did that at that time.
Frank's up there reading the letter from Maria, his wife, about when you're going to come home, like you've been there ages, like this is the second or third tour, and the two MPs come up and there's a skull there. They're like, what, is that a real skull? And he's like, found it outside a complex or a bunker after recording some napalm. Like, you left it there. It's human remains. And he's like, it's good for morale.
Yeah, I like that. I like the fact he barely looks up as well. Yeah. He doesn't give two fucks.
But everyone else has got like a shadow and you can see their eyes. Frank is just black.
I love that. Black. I will say Jason Burrows in this was a bit of a kind of...
This is the best I've seen Burrows, actually.
I didn't know he would be such a good artist for The Punisher.
And people he's almost know a little bit restrained, I think.
They will know that name, Jason Burrows, for like the Avatar books and like Neonomicon and the Cross books. This dude knows how to fuck up the human body in ways that you can't possibly imagine. And this is almost a restrained and cleaner approach to what he's done. And I think the ink is obviously doing a lot of that work as well, I think. Because there's a thicker line to it, isn't it?
And the colour. There's an interesting use of flat colour on this as well.
Which gives it a real... This is the most I've liked his art. And I do like his art. I'm a big fan of his art before anyone says anything. But there's just a lot of acting going on. There's but he draws a fucking good Frank Castle. Like, the bloke doesn't do anything. In Frank Castle, minor spoilers, he doesn't really do anything in this issue in terms of like having a fight. But he's a wall of a man, isn't he?
Yeah, God.
Yeah, the platoon did that as well, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know you talked about this being the sort of second movie, but this is so much Apocalypse Now.
Mm.
So what happens is in Apocalypse Now, they call the Martin Sheen character, whose name I've just looked up, who was Captain Benjamin Willard. They call him in to go on a mission to kill Colonel Kurtz. And this is what they're doing here. They're calling Frank in. And there's this tension in the room, isn't there? Where Frank's no fucking fool.
There's a general there as well, isn't there? There's
and two CIA agents. Yeah. And he's basically saying, no, the logical thing is we kill Fury.
So he says, you know, we could rescue. What is anyone considered a rescue? And they're like, no, it's like.
Yeah,
and that it's so like the scene where Martin Sheen gets called in. Do you remember Harrison Ford's in that scene, pre-Star Wars, as well, isn't he?
Yeah,
and Coppola uses like signifiers of moments. There's one point where someone puts down a knife, signifying they don't want to kill. There's all these things going on, and there's this real sort of seeping, overbearing like tension. And I think we don't quite get it as well done, obviously, but we get that in this scene.
Yeah.
You know there's stuff going on in Frank's head, but he doesn't say it in this scene. Also, he doesn't overplay it.
In terms of like action and what the body's doing, Burrows, this guy doesn't move. He's always to attention. He's not relaxed. He's a military man. He's listening. He's listening to everything. A lot of the words are coming from the CIA people because the general at one point... I love this as well, that... the sort of panel, sort of the narrative that they do this. The general looks away. He's looking out a window, smoking a cigar. It's almost like he can't look at the situation because of what they're going to ask to do. And for him, that's like an unpatriotic act to kill Nick Fury. If we think of Nick Fury, we know Nick Fury. We know what Nick Fury knows. So the act of, you need to kill this man, It feels like, that's a traitorous sort of act in some sort of way. And there's a wonderful scene. There's four panels, and the CIA, and it's, a lot of it is dialogue from the CIA guys talking to Frank Castle, who's just listening. He doesn't say anything. There's not a big lot of dialogue, him going backwards and forwards. And the last panel is the CIA saying, "We can. What we can tell you, Captain Castle, is that you'll be doing your country an enormous service."
Yeah,
and as they say this, there's a panel and it's just Frank Castle's face, but his eyes are completely dark.
Yeah.
And you feel like Castle, you never know what kind of what he's thinking, but you can feel, I don't know why, you know, we've probably got our own interpretation of what he's thinking at that moment. Part of me is thinking that he's like, fuck off, this is, you know.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking he's thinking, I'll do what you tell me, but I'm saving him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I hope that's kind of where they're going with it.
Yeah. He's kind of looking at these guys. These guys who are dressed in short sleeve shirts, they're not sweaty, you know, these are the well dressed people, and he's looking at them and it's that kind of that cold, there's no emotion on his face, but I feel I can read it as, you people have no fucking idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, so the thing is, they think he's an idiot because he's a grunt soldier, and he knows
who's good at killing, that's all they know. Yeah.
And then he knows they're duplicitous fucking fools who've turned up without any experience of being in country and are trying to tell him what to do. That's that thing. And the general's caught there because he knows he's got to obey orders, or the colonel, whoever he is. It's a really well-made scene, I have to say.
Yeah. And the point where Castle's like, you want me to kill him, he cuts them off because they're talking for a long time, and he's like, you want me to kill him.
They're like salesmen trying to talk him into buying a car.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. And they're like, oh, they're totally caught by the fact that he's like, yeah. And he's got a fucking jaw like a breadboard in this, Frank Castle. So
I don't know if you noticed, you know, when they're talking to the veteran at the start, the Et Viet Cong, I think it was. Yeah. There's a recorder on the table. So
That's the one we use. That's exactly the one we use for interviews.
Do you think that's the same reporter who does all of the? Because in the platoon, there was someone talking to his old squad, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think that's what it's all about.
Makes sense.
Because there's
it's a shame they couldn't.
You don't hear the reporter's voice in this, do you?
Not so far. It's a shame they didn't get Parloff to do it. As much as I think the art is good, I would have liked that consistency of having Parloff do it, I think.
Fair play.
It's good, man.
I'll be on for the ride on this one.
As well as that, there's also, you see the Nick Fury side, and if you like, we're talking, oh, this is a rollicking good, this is quite a heavy book, it is a good time, but if you're squeamish, maybe it's not for you.
Oh, the end of it goes for it.
Something fucking brutal happens. Absolutely brutal. And Jason,
it's like the old Kent Road on a Saturday night. That's what it's like.
Yeah. And like I say, I gave a little hint there. Jason Burrows knows how to fuck up a human body. And that's all I'm going to say.
Not to spoil that scene too much, but like, it sets up the fact that this is not like film Hollywood rules.
Yeah,
you can't do this. This is like real.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if you fuck about,
the last five pages of this are a horror book.
Yeah,
it's completely what it is. And Nick Fury, this isn't your apple pie Nick Fury. This is Nick Fury in the Vietnam War, written by Garthinis. That is all I got to say. So get Fury, issue one. If you're like me and you read no other Marvel comics, make this the Marvel comic you read.
Yeah, this is the one for the week.
I know it's been a long time in the works, but hey, if we've got to wait a long time for stuff like this, then fucking I'll be patient.
Well, Frank's off babysitting in Weird World. At least we've got this.
Tony, do you want to take us home?
Yeah, last one is Legion of Darkness, the Fourth Eagle, written, drawn, and lettered by a guy called Chrill, Chrill. Anyone heard of him? Not somebody I'd heard of previously. Hmm. Published by Source Point Press, who I know we mentioned earlier. I was totally drawn in by the cover of this. I sent you guys it. It's like a wine red. It looks like aged leather book. Yeah, an old school leather book. It's got that sort of quality, top and bottom. And then in the middle, you've got this grayscale image central showing ghostly centurions, most of them in shadow, and the leader up front with these sort of dead eyes, ghostly eyes looking at the reader. And I really liked it. I really liked what they did with that. It has a storytelling on it, but it also almost has a library historical quality to it.
Yes. Yeah. It does feel like that. Yeah.
The summary of it is there's three outcast warriors venture into the forests of Teutoburg. the scene of one of the greatest Roman military defeats, to return a coin to the ghosts of soldiers who fell in that battle. Now, I looked up the Battle of Teutoburg, and it was the Germanic tribes versus the Roman Empire, and three Roman legions were ambushed in the woods. And it's a marker, as it's seen by historians, as a marker for the turn where the Roman spread invasion of countries in Europe was beginning to slow, because they had this massive defeat. Now, this is centuries later, and these three men walk into the woods. I went into this blind, so I didn't have any preconceptions that this was going to be an action book, but because it's a Roman centurion thing, and especially after having read, I don't know, Marini's book, Eagles of Rome, and stuff like that, I really do like that as an action genre. It's utilized quite a lot with On Bond SNA. We don't see it so much here. But I didn't really think it was going to be what I came across in the end. It does not rely on battles at all. It's simply a 24-page black and white one-off issue, which I kind of like. I think we need that more. I'm quite happy. Small press does it, don't we? We do one-off books.
Yeah.
Or we try too often. The three soldiers in it are not actually, could not be either be categorized as action heroes. There's a sort of skinny, older, bald man. There's a bearded man who has got one side of his face completely burned away, not dissimilar to a certain strike in a comic we just talked about. So it looks like he's had that, if you see what I mean. And the leader is a man who has knowledge of magic, really. There's a sort of mysticism, there's a mystic quality to him, but he's the guy who's leading it. And they venture into this dark woods, and they're observed constantly as they wander into the woods by a fox. And the artist, the creativist Trill, manages to make the woods a personality. So we get, again, like we had with the Rook, we get pages of no words. So they're wandering into the dark woods, not particularly dark, but they're wandering into the deep woods. And you get a sense of this overbearing atmosphere of danger, mysticism, the dead are watching, this sort of thing. As they progress into the woods, they pass the 200-year-old remains of dead soldiers. So you get this sense that no one has progressed that far into the woods previously. And there's like a skull with a centurion's helmet on. There's a broken sword on the floor. And they pass the stream where the ambush took place. And one of them says, "This would make a good place for an ambush." And someone said, "I don't think you're the first person to say that." And at that point, out of the mist comes the dead, comes the ghosts of the dead, and they're confronted by them. And I'll let you read it, but there's no big culmination of a bombastic fight or anything like that, but there's this moment between them where they're put to rest. And it's really well done. The art reminds me a bit of Johnny Cannon, actually. I'm going to say it's got a touch of that about it somewhere.
Hmm.
And I like that creepiness to it. And I like the fact that they haven't gone for this obvious fucking three-act structure that bores me to death. They're just, it's a walk in the woods and a confrontation of people who are there putting to rest after 200 years. And yeah, really good. It's all in black and white. The interiors are all in black and white, by the way. But yeah, get on it. It's by Source Point Press. I think it came out at the end of last year. Trill, not a creator, not an artist I know of. Source Point Press have come up maybe two or three times in the last 6 months with us. They do some interesting stuff. Quite like this stuff. So Legion of Darkness, the Fourth Eagle. There you go. Smile.
Nice.
Great.
Crikey, lads. How many comics have we got to recommend from people?
We've got a long this week, guys.
This has been an epic week, and thank you, Zach, for joining us.
Thanks, man.
No problem.
Cheers, dude. No, it's got dark. Zach's had to turn the light on. It's how long he's been sitting there talking to us.
Yeah.
My wife's waiting downstairs for us to go home.
Because we have about 20 minutes of chatting beforehand as well. So it's like,
But we're signing off now, and we hope you have enjoyed this week's episode. We're going to check out everything that we've talked about, because that's why we talk about comics on this show, so you can discover some new stuff that you might really, really like. If there's anything you want us to talk about in upcoming shows, or if you've got any charity initiatives, doing anything comics positive, let us know, and we want to shout about it. There's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media, on X. Oh, fuck it. On Twitter, we're at The Awesome Pod. And on Instagram, we're at Awesome Comics Pod, where we'll be posting up what we've been talking about the show, retweeting comics positivity. That's what we're doing. Cool artwork to check out, cool independent Kickstarters to check out, etc. It's all on there. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, give us a review, subscribe, let's people know about the show and everything we talk about on a weekly basis. You can also leave a comment and a review on Spotify, so please do that there if you listen to us there. We're also on other networks like Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, I've been doing a lot of psychology podcasts recently.
Of course you have.
So I think let's get Zach involved in this. So I'm going to do a psychology test on you, Zach. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say a word, right?
Yeah.
And if you hear the word, so listen carefully, if you hear the word cheese, it means you like red wine. There's something in your head that means you like red wine. But if you hear the word leaf, you like white wine.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to say a word, and you've got to tell me what you hear.
Okay.
Penis.
I heard tit.
Vince has got his hand in his face in his hand.
We're fully grown men, and
we got absolutely done up with that one at the start.
I can't stop giggling at that.
Yeah.
I actually had to put the mic over. Like my face, so Zach.
With my acting, ability.
It was phenomenal. You're like Olivier.
Thank you. I'm related to him, don't you?
We need to talk about this off air.
Look up Laurence Olivier on Wikipedia and look to see his first wife was. That's all.
What was that? You?
Okay.
Yeah, I was his first wife.
But where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
NeverOnAnything.com.
Or on Wikipedia as Laurence Olivier's wife. Dan?
You can find me on X, aka Twitter, at Vanguard, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. You can find me and my big stick energy on social media at Jester Diablo.
You do it because I love it now. That's the only reason you do it.
Yeah. and the wonderful Mr. Zach Cahill.
Yeah,
thank you again,
man,
for joining us.
Cheers, dude.
Where can people find you and all your comics and everything in between?
Probably Instagram is best, at Zach W. Cahill.
There you go. So go follow him, because there's, the comics are brilliant. I can't wait to see it.
Man, we love your stuff.
Yeah, really do.
Can you get them in Gosh, did you say? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, they're all gone. I went in there the other week and they're sold out.
Oh, wow. Nice work.
Yeah,
nice. That's sort of like good bad news, isn't it? You walk in.
I know. I was like, should I give them more? But anyway, you can get them on Big Cartel, is probably the easiest way.
Nice. Go get them. Go read loads of great comics wherever you are in the world. We hope you're happy, healthy, and enjoying what you're reading and enjoying what you're making, because that's what it's all about, and that's what this show's all about. So join us next week for quite a special episode. I'll just say this, we've scratched another one off the bucket list. And
is that next weekend?
That's next weekend. So we've got to just refresh ourselves on a couple of books.
Do some revising.
Yeah.
Do some revising on some epic books. And so look forward to that. No spoilers. Well, we'll tell Zach once we've signed off. From Dan, Tony, Zach and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Keep making all those brilliant comics. And as always, what should they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Come on, Zach. You got to say it.
Stay awesome.
We actually can't finish the show until you say
it. It's better with his accent.
Yeah, it's better. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.